We got a quorum. This meeting will come to order. Councilman Woods, please stand for a moment of silence.
Thank you. Thank you, President Hartman-Riegel. Today, I'd like to have this moment of silence. I think it's appropriate. Today, this Friday, will be 1 year since the death of Councilman Retta. So I'd like to have this moment of silence for Councilman Retta.
Thank you. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Please call the roll.
Here.
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 Thank you. Is there a motion to correct or amend the minutes of March 28, 2017?
Motion to approve the March 28th budget address and county council meeting minutes as distributed.
Second.
All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Announcements from members of council. Are there any announcements from members of council regarding legislation?
Here.
Mr. Smiley.
At the appropriate time, I will be introducing, having read into the record, R-17-071, and then making a motion to have it tabled. It's the first part of the budget legislation for FY18.
Okay, and next I will be presenting Resolution 17069 and 17070 later on. Next is, Betsy, Mike, if you can have a seat. Introduction of ordinances. All ordinances may be considered at the next regular council meeting, with the exception of those items that require board or commission recommendations. Madam Clerk, please read in the introduction of ordinances. Please have reports from any committees of council, beginning with special services, Mr. Sheldon.
Yes, Madam Chair. Get my ducks in a row here. We had on Tuesday, April 4th, 1:30 on the 8th floor, we had discussions about the Brandywine 100 sewer update, which was canceled until next meeting. We talked about special services staffing and potential with the additional forestry crew, and potential sewer service to the eastern wing of the southern sewer service area. It was all talked about for 2 hours.
Thank you. Personnel?
Also on the personnel, it was chaired. We had a discussion on the boards and commissions, subcommittees, and new co-chairs.
Land use, Ms. Kilpatrick?
Thank you. Tuesday, April 4th, at the Land Use Committee meeting, we had a presentation and discussion on the rezoning for the Promenade at Christiana.
Boards and commissions, Ms. Diller? Not here. Mr. Cartier?
Finance.
Finance?
Yes. Okay, thank you, Madam President. Today, Finance Committee met at 1:30. We had a series of resolutions and ordinances, which will mostly be on the agenda of tonight. Highlight will be the resolution concerning the county capital program for fiscal year 2018 through 2023, which will be tabled. It's a budget ordinance. We had a software maintenance ordinance, which I'll get into this evening under my sponsorship. Another ordinance prescribing details and form for providing a sale of general obligation bonds in New Castle County. We had a couple of light tax ordinances pertaining to subdivisions below the canal. Also, we have ordinances that will cover our funding of the summer youth program. We are also under ordinance appropriating money from the Garson Trust tonight, which is an annual exercise of County Council. We approved three grants, council grants under other, and adjourned the meeting.
Thank you. Public Safety, Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Madam President. Our Public Safety Committee meeting this afternoon was held in the County Council Committee Chambers upstairs on the 8th floor. We had two presentations that were made by our Public Safety Department, in particular Dave Carpenter, our Emergency Management Coordinator. One was on the 2017 Community Emergency Response Team Training Program, referred to commonly as CERT, C-E-R-T. And the other one was on the RAVE Panic Button Smart 911 Facility Program Update. I would also, at this point in time, because Councilman Jay Street, who we both co-chair Public Safety, made comment on the record up there in reference to our support for our police department and whatever it takes to get something accomplished here that's very meaningful. I think it's incumbent upon us to have Councilman Street just voice how this council feels about what's going on and supporting public safety.
Mr. Street?
Yes, Madam President.
And been called upon.
Thank you, Co-Chairman Bell. The heinous crime, it took place in Banning Park last week. It's outrageous, and I think I spoke for most, if not all, council members, and I specifically told the Director of Public Safety that whatever additional tools that they need in the toolbox to bring this person to justice and reduce the likelihood of occurrences in the future, to bring it to us, let us fight about it, and do everything that he can do, everything the department can do, to bring this person to justice and to do whatever they can think of as a department to reduce the likelihood of future occurrences.
Mr. Shrey, can you share with us what that crime was?
The crime was the sexual assault of a four-year-old child who was taken out of Banning Park.
Thank you. Next is the Executive Committee met today at 4 p.m. where we discussed Resolution 17074, Ordinance 17023, and had a lengthy discussion on Ordinance 17021. Also, Mr. Smiley, I've seen your hand.
Yeah, are you finished?
Yeah, this part of it, yes.
Okay. On April 3rd, Council reviewed the FY 2018 recommended capital budget. Yesterday, we reviewed the recommended FY 2018 budget for the row offices, the exec office, and the county auditor. And next Monday, we will be reviewing the land use budget request.
Thank you. Next, the consent calendar. Any member of the public, council or the public may remove an item from the consent calendar for further discussion by a simple request. If an item is not removed, it will not be subject to amendment, discussion, or other objection and will be voted upon as a package. Consent calendar items are noted on the agendas as such and available in the back of this room and online. Is there anyone from council or the public who wishes to have an item removed at this time? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved.
Ms. Kirkpatrick.
Thank you. I don't want anything removed. I just want to make sure that before I vote on this that I'm marked present.
Okay.
Marked present?
Correct. Yes.
Same here, Madam President.
Yeah.
Any others? Okay. Is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Madam Clerk, please proceed with the reading of the consent calendar. Thank you. Next, we have Mr.
Yes.
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 Thank you. Mr. Sheldon, I notice you're motioning over. Did you want to make a motion?
Yes, I want to. After Mr. Woods.
Not
okay,
present.
Mr. Woods.
Because the item's on the agenda, I'd like to make a motion to go out of order to hear ordinance number 16-136.
Second.
Okay, it has passed. Motion to go out of order. It is passed.
No, we need point of order.
Let's vote.
We need a fair vote.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Against? Motion is passed. Mr. Sheldon.
Madam Chair, I would also move that we go out of order proceeding after 16-036 to go out of order with the people in the behind us with the ordinance 17-021 be moved up in the agenda again right after Mr. Woods' ordinance 16-036.
Second.
Second. Motion to remain out of order.
Yep.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No.
Thank you.
The motion is passed.
If we will.
Mr. Woods?
Okay, I'd like to bring forward 16-136 to be read by title only and placed before council.
Second.
Mr. Woods?
Yes, this project, this is coming back for us. This is a project that's been looked at for almost 9 years. They've changed a little bit of the footprint, and they're coming back before council. This is a very good project, and I'll let Mr. Forson speak for the
developer.
Good evening, members of council. Thank you for going out of order for what I hope will be a brief presentation. I'll certainly try not to take up very much time. As the councilman has indicated, this is kind of, I'll call it the re-rezoning for the promenade at Christiana, which is the old Sears warehouse site, which backs up to I-95. We were before you roughly 9 years ago and got this property rezoned, and let's put up the old rezoning plan. And this was the plan that was approved at that time. There is a string of, I'll say, inline stores, followed by a larger store at the eastern end of the property. For a variety of reasons, our timing could not have been worse because just as this project got approved, we entered a major recession, and retailers put a lot of projects on hold, including retailers who were supposed to go here. We are working now with some other retailers and hope to have some lease signings soon. And if you can put the new project, what we are now doing is simply flipping the project and moving the inline stores to the eastern side and the larger store to the western side of the property. Essentially a mirror image, but under county, under the Unified Development Code, because we're making a change like this, we have to come back to you to get your approval to make this change. As part of the original rezoning, we agreed to construct either one road on Arnickel, and we're doing that right now, and that road runs from 273 over to the Christiana Mall. We agreed to give our neighbor to the east of the Budovich property access across our property to tie in the Eagle Run Road. We had that agreement with the Budoviches. We also agreed to make contributions to other traffic improvements. We had that agreement in place with DelDOT. So we did the things, and we're doing the things that we said we would do as part of this rezoning. In connection with this plan, as it turns out, we're actually reducing the square footage slightly, by roughly 35,000 square feet or so. It just happened to be the way the store's laid out on this plan. But it's a $70 million project. We hope to start construction this summer or no later than the fall once we get all the construction drawings reviewed, approved, and ready to go. Eagle Run Road itself should be complete later this spring, and that was one of the conditions for us to move forward with this project. I'm more than happy to try to answer any questions. I know I saw you all last week. Councilman?
Yes. Councilman Powers.
Yes. A question I was going to ask the other day, and I think Councilman Tackett was wondering too, what is the landscaping going to be on the I-95 side?
Councilman Tackett asked me a question about landscaping after last week's hearing. And we have done up a color rendering which shows the landscape plan. We tried to get it mounted on a big board, but our plotter broke. We just didn't have enough time to get that fixed. So what you'll see is there's already a fair amount of existing vegetation, trees and whatnot, in the I-95 right-of-way between I-95 and this property that shields some of the property. We will be essentially lining the rear of the property with trees, and so that's what this, it's only 8.5 by 11, but I have copies for everybody.
Okay, are there any other questions for council? Mr. Powers, and then Mr. Smiley.
I just want to comment. I mean, right now, you know, there's some, but you really see an open field to what the building was.
Correct.
And seeing this, there's quite a bit of landscaping.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Woods, you're motioning? Is that a hand raise?
Yes. I just wanted to add that we're talking today about another ordinance that's coming up here, and this particular project was done with a PLA, a project labor agreement, which ensures that all the workers on the project will be Delaware employers or Delaware employees. This is something the county could think up, too, if we want to proceed with some better stuff.
And then Mr. Smiley?
Yeah, I can't tell from this, and you really don't have to respond. I'm just going to recommend, based on the last storm we had and a stroll through my district and all of the buffers, try not to go with pine trees.
I hear you.
Maybe medical marijuana plants.
Mr. Tackett.
Thank you, Madam President. Which I just wanted to
we needed to let it be built.
Thank you for taking the opportunity to get us this plan. I mean, I think it's very important. You know, this section of 95 is our gateway through, you know, our little state here as you, you know, come out of Maryland and then travel into PA or vice versa. And you taking the extra time to get us this really, I think, you know, helps a lot and gives us the visual. I did send the plan over to our policy director, who it's now up there, but it does show that, you know, this will look nice as you drive through our little state, and it won't be just a, you know, a solid deck of a building or something that we potentially could have gotten with the reshifting of the building. So thank you for taking the time to get this to us, because it is important we vote on this.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions from the council? Seeing none, I'll open the floor to the public for comment. Seeing none, I'll close the floor to the public. Are there any final comments from council? This is a reminder to council that this is a poll vote. Madam Clerk, please call the roll on 16136.
I am voting yes, based upon a positive recommendation of our Land Use Department.
I am voting yes, based on the positive recommendation of our Land Use Department, and that this new plan that goes with this rezoning comports with the original concept of the site.
I am voting yes, based on the positive recommendation of Land Use, but I'm not sure this is a poll vote.
It's a rezoning.
I will be voting yes based on the positive recommendations of the Land Use Department.
I'm voting yes in support of the recommendations from the Land Use Department.
I'm voting yes based on the recommendation from the Department of Land Use.
Yes, I'm voting yes by the positive recommendation from the Planning Department and the character of the area.
I will be voting yes based upon the positive recommendation from Land Use Department.
I'll be voting yes. I am voting yes, based on a positive recommendation of the Land Use Department.
I'm voting yes, based on the recommendation of the department. Going forward, there needs to be some clarification on what is and what is not a poll.
Yeah. I'm voting yes in coordination with Land Use and the Planning Board.
Based upon the affirmative recommendation from the Land Use Department and the Planning Board, I am voting yes.
And based on the recommendations of the Planning Department, I will also be voting yes.
Okay, 16136 is passed.
Thank you.
Next is 17021. Mr. Hollins.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that ordinance number 17021 be read by title only and placed before council for its consideration and adoption.
Okay, Mr. Hollins?
Thank you, Madam President. This ordinance will amend the existing responsible contractor orders, ordinance as mentioned. 10 years ago, Newcastle County adopted the responsible contractor ordinance. 10 years ago, I voted for the responsible contractor ordinance, supporting a theory that it would create more jobs, and especially more jobs within the minority community. To be very clear, the ordinance did not create any apprenticeships. So no amendment to the ordinance will eliminate any apprenticeships. Apprenticeships did not increase due to the ordinance, nor will they decrease with the proposed amendment. The ordinance only created an advantage to large businesses that already provided apprenticeships. It is that advantage that has resulted in a disadvantage for most small companies where it is not practical to afford apprenticeships. That includes almost all minority-owned companies, and there is a long list of credible small businesses, including those minority-owned businesses that are based in Newcastle County, pay taxes in Newcastle County, but cannot bid for projects in Newcastle County that their tax dollars are paying for. While I support the value of apprenticeships for its intended purpose, to train our workforce for career opportunities, I do not believe apprenticeships should be used as a tool to discriminate against small businesses by providing an advantage to big business. I believe in an inclusive economy, and small business is a critical component to a healthy economy. The room this evening is divided between those who have enjoyed an advantage from Newcastle County for the last 10 years and those who have been seeking equity from Newcastle County for the last 10 years. And even if the amendment passes tonight, it will not bring equity because it still contains limitations for small businesses. It is not the job of government to stifle small business growth and limit competition for the advantage of special interests. I want to be extremely clear that I have no personal or professional affiliations here tonight. There's also the claim that apprenticeships lead to greater diversity in employment, but the bitter truth is, of the 749 apprenticeships in Newcastle County, only 10% are African American, in a county that is 24% African American. It just seems to me that the apprentice program itself also lacks diversity. If there is any evidence that the responsible contractor ordinance has created more jobs, and especially more jobs in the minority community, those numbers would be reflected in the reports. Those reports have been a point of discussion among concerned council members for a number of years with no action being taken. 10 years ago, I voted based upon a theory that unfortunately did not live up to its promise. So tonight, I am offering an amendment based on the facts we have learned over those 10 years. This evening, Matt Rosen, a policy advisor to the Newcastle County Executive, has led the research. And based on the data, he has prepared an analysis that he will present to County Council in this presentation. At the end of the presentation, I would hope the council members can hold their questions for time's sake. Matt Rosen will be joined by Jack Wallace and Steve Rubel from the County's Department of Special Services. So at this time, I would ask Mr. Rosen to come forward.
Mr. Rosen?
Madam President, can I comment while they're coming up?
Yes, Mr. Smiley.
In order to expedite the process, I just want to go on the record to anyone that may be listening to the recording of this meeting tonight. Relative to this ordinance, you will find my comments in the previously recorded April 11, 2017 Executive Committee online. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Rosen, please come around down this side. Sign in with Mr. Smiley. Come on up. State your name, position.
We usually don't have the calendar.
Ms. Kilpatrick.
Thank you. Before the presentation, I would like to announce that I will have a floor amendment to go with this ordinance.
Okay. Does anyone from council have questions or comments on the floor amendment?
Well, we don't know yet.
It's whatever.
Not due yet.
So the amendment, so that it can be integrated into the discussion, I guess, what I'm proposing, the section where it says the Chief of Administrative Services and the Office of Administrative Services, jointly with the General Manager of the Department of Special Services, may order the invitation to be amended to exclude the certification requirements set forth in subsection 205303D3A8. I'm not comfortable with the fact that two people would be making that decision, and I feel that it should be codified. So the amendment would be to place the wording, the invitation shall be amended to exclude the certification requirement set forth in subsection 205303D3A8. So after the amendment, if it should pass, it would say, if the Office of Administrative Services receives no qualifying bids in response to its initial invitation to bid for a contract, the invitation shall be amended to exclude the certification requirements set forth in subsection 205303D3A8.
Okay, next is...
We have to ask if there's been a second to the motion.
A second to the motion.
Second.
Okay.
And now discussion on the motion.
We will get to that, Mr. Warner.
Okay, but by Robert's rules of order, if the motion's been made.
Okay, can we get the lesson after this? Does anyone from council have questions or comments on the floor amendment?
Yes, I do.
Mr. Warner.
Yes. Is the basis of this ordinance for technical compliance or consistency with other rules and regulations in our code?
I do not believe it is. I can defer to council to council to respond to that. It was kind of a comfort level with me with rather than leaving two individuals who out into perpetuity, you don't know who those two individuals are, rather than leaving the discretion to them that if no qualifying bid comes in, that it automatically would go out without the restriction.
Thank you.
Councilman Weiner.
Mr. Hollins.
Thank you, Madam President. If I may help, currently we have projects that are on hold indefinitely. One is in Rockwood Park, where you'll see in the presentation. The other one is down in the Glasgow Park, where we simply cannot get bids in on those jobs under the current legislation. The proposed amendment would allow currently the two general managers, and I think Councilwoman Kilpatrick would not like to give them that sort of discretion, that we would then go back out to bid on those instances where we do not get any bids. So I support her. I consider a friendly amendment.
Are there any other questions or comments from council?
I get one.
Mr. Tackett, was that a hand raise?
Yeah, since you called on me. Madam President, Madam President, just to clarify, I wasn't sure Councilwoman Kilpatrick made a motion. I didn't hear her. She just said she would like to read in for clarity into the presentation.
And I may not have said that.
Yeah.
So I move.
Okay.
That helps.
She moves?
Good.
I
that
move
way
we already
yeah.
have a second.
You got a second. Right.
Sorry.
Okay. I'll open up the floor to the public for comment on the floor amendment.
I'm not yet. No. Just one quick question. So the difference would be, instead of two people deciding to throw it out or not, it's just automatically thrown out.
No.
They don't have to comply.
You're asking Ms. Kilpatrick?
That they do not have to comply.
Ms. Kilpatrick, would you like to respond to Mr. Sheldon?
Yes. I mean, this says they may order the invitation to be amended, and I'm saying that the invitation shall be amended to exclude the certification requirements set forth into the subsection. If only if there is no qualifying bids that come in.
Okay, so in other words, either way, it's...
Either way.
It's going to be rebid without the
yes.
qualification.
So this is just taking the people out of it and codifying it.
Okay.
Okay, again, I'll open the floor to the public for comment on the floor amendment. Seeing none, I'll close the floor to the public. Are there any final comments from council on the floor amendment? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please call the roll on the floor amendment.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
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 Yes. No.
Yes.
No.
The floor amendment is passed. Mr. Hollins? Next.
We will proceed, if there are no further comments on the amendment, we will proceed with the presentation from Mr. Rosen.
Mr. Street.
Are y'all going to be going make people sit through 15-minute presentations? Are we going to make 15 minutes ago?
Yeah.
I think there's two additional people in the audience. We're going to do it for them.
I'll be back.
Jack and Coke.
Mr. Rosen, if you would, proceed, please.
All right. Next. Betsy? You read the amended version? Do we have it? We're waiting for the amended version.
Well, see, the amendment did pass, right?
Yeah.
So, before we take the vote, then you can read the amended version of the ordinance. You don't have to do it right now.
Right.
You can do it before we vote on the ordinance as amended to include that.
Okay, next, does anyone from council have questions or comments on 17021 as amended? Seeing none, I'll open the floor to the public for comment on 17021 as amended.
We have a presentation.
Nope. We already...
Yeah.
Okay, well, here we go. Right. Mr. Rosen?
Okay.
Again?
Yep. Happy to go through it again, no problem. So I'm here today, as you know, to talk about the contract responsibility certification. specifically the apprentice requirement. 10 years ago, the county passed a law, as you all know, requiring contractors to sponsor apprentices, and this is a unique law. Neither of the other counties in the state have a similar law, and the state government does not have a law like this either. It's a unique law, and the idea behind this law is to encourage contractors to hire apprentices. And that is something that the county executive supports. It's very important to encourage apprenticeship, and it is certainly a good idea to encourage contractors to hire apprentices. The issue is, with the research we've done on the law and the books, we found that there have been some unintended negative consequences as a result of this law, and that there's a need to modify the law, and therefore the county executive is supporting Ordinance 17021 because it continues to encourage apprenticeship while fixing the negative consequences of the current law. And in this presentation, I'll provide an explanation of what those unintended consequences are and why there's a need, arguably a need to modify this law. So one unintended consequence of this law has been its effect on small businesses. And we're finding that the law has been excluding many small businesses. And why is that? So one reason is affordability. Apprenticeship can be pricey because generally to sponsor an apprentice, that means you need to hire someone new who you can enroll in as an apprentice. And you have to keep in mind that contractors in Delaware tend to be small, only an average of 5.8 employees per firm, which is rather small. And if you're asking a firm of that size to hire a new person, that is a substantial increase in their staff. Just one person would be 15%, more than that, actually. So it's especially demanding considering that many contractors are finding it hard to get work for their current employees and keep their current employees off the unemployment line. It can be quite impractical to ask them to hire a new person to enroll in the apprenticeship program, in many cases for smaller and medium-sized businesses.
Excuse me, Mr. Rosen, yes. Can we do an abbreviate to speed it up because we've got...
Okay. I can certainly be brief.
Excuse me. Madam President, I can appreciate the abbreviated version, but please make sure you hit the right point. It's important. This is the meeting we'll be voting on it.
Okay.
So it's important that we have, which is Councilman Hollins is trying to get, is the detailed record so the information's there because you never know where you're going to end up at the end of the day.
Okay. So I'll try to be as brief as possible while hitting all of the important points.
I think you're saying what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, and I want to add that under the current law, contractors have to employ multiple apprentices in many cases if there are multiple trades in the contract. So that can be even more difficult if you have to hire 2, 3, 4 new people to enroll as apprentices. If you have a staff of 6 or even 10, 15 or 20, that can be extraordinarily difficult and costly and difficult to comply. So now even if a contractor is ready, willing, and able to participate in an apprenticeship program and can afford it, it can be very difficult to comply or impossible in many cases because one requirement of apprenticeship is classroom instruction. And quite simply, there's not classroom instruction for every trade available locally. To break that down, VOTEC regularly offers classes for 9 trades. That's out of 26 prevailing wage trades. Okay, and they're listed up there. Trade associations provide classes for a few more trades, but those classes are not available to most contractors in the state. So most contractors would not be able to comply, would not be able to sponsor an apprentice. And then for 12 trades, there are no local apprenticeship classes at all. So no contractors in the state would really be able to comply and to sponsor an apprentice. They find it relatively impossible. And so the result is that we are losing bidders. Bidders who were getting county awards before are no longer getting awards. They're no longer able to compete. So up here you can see the number of contractors that the county used in the 9 years leading up to the passage of this law. It was 192 of them. Out of those, 146 of them, that's 76% of contractors, have not received any further awards from the county. They've basically been pushed out of competition. Before, in the 9 years leading up to the law passing, they got $20.7 million of awards. Since the law was passed, they have gotten $0 in awards. And it's not that they don't want to bid on public construction contracts anymore. This is an incomplete list based on just the companies that we found, that we've pinpointed, that are still bidding on state contracts, but are no longer bidding on county contracts. They've been pushed out of competition. So there are contractors out there that are ready, willing, and able to bid on county work, but they've been pushed out of the process. An effect of this, of excluding small businesses, is that we're seeing lower minority inclusion, because often minority-owned businesses are small businesses, and they're finding it difficult to comply with this law. So before the law was put into effect, you had 6 African-American contractors over the 9 years before the law was put into effect. 6 African-American contractors that the county used. It's not a high number. It's 2.6% of the county's total contractors. But it got even worse after the law was passed. In the 9 years after the law was passed, the county only used 2 African-American contractors, 0.9%. And for a point of comparison, 8% of the vendors that the county uses overall are African-American owned, but for construction, it's 0.9%. So there's a big disparity, and a big part of that is the apprenticeship requirement is keeping African-American contractors out of the process. And it stands to reason that we also have low minority workers inclusion as a result of that. If you look at county projects, only 12.7% of workers on county projects are African-American. Meanwhile, they comprise 24.3% of the Newcastle County residents and 28% of the adult population in Newcastle County without a four-year degree, which is generally the target population you want to see going into the trades. So there's kind of a disparity there, and African-Americans are underrepresented. Even in minority neighborhoods where we're doing projects, there's low representation. With the Route 9 Library, only 9.5%, 23 out of 242 workers are African American, and that's in a neighborhood that is 69% African American. And for that reason, we've heard a lot of complaints about this project that from the local residents saying that this is a project in their neighborhood, but they don't see representation on that project. Another effect is that the requirement is moving business out of state because, as I discussed earlier, many classes for many trades are not available in the state, which makes it difficult or impossible for local contractors to comply. The result is that the county is often forced to award contracts to out-of-state businesses. An example is Bear Library from 2012 for the millwork and casework contract. 3 in-state contractors expressed an interest but could not bid because of the apprenticeship requirement. And the result was the county issued an RFP twice, got one bid each time, and each time it was from an out-of-state contractor. So, and for aluminum storefront and glass, 3 in-state contractors, again, expressed an interest but couldn't bid. The county got 2 bids, both from out-of-state contractors. But even among those 2 out-of-state contractors, the county had to disqualify the lower bidder because of the apprenticeship requirement, and they had to award it to a higher bidder at 40% greater cost. You had a similar situation with ceramic tile and flooring, where the low bid from the in-state low bid was disqualified. So there are Delaware contractors who are ready, willing, and able to do this work, but unfortunately they're being disqualified. The work is going out of state and costing more as a result. A few other examples, the Kirkwood Library for the glazing contract. No in-state contractors can meet it, so the $700,000 contract was given to a Pennsylvania company. The Route 9 Library, as of March 2007, 58.5% of wages are going to out-of-state workers. So it's an enormous project, and most of the wages are flowing to out-of-state workers, not in the local economy. Rockwood Mansion in 2012, the roof estimates received no in-state bids, and it ended up costing more than double the original estimate. So again, work is going out of state, and it's costing more as a result. the overall effect of this, you can see here, this graph on the left is before the law was passed. Before the law was passed, you had 50.8% of county construction spending going to Delaware companies, so slightly more than half. After the law was passed, since the law was passed, only 35.6% of county construction spending is going to in-state contractors. 64.4%, most of that money that we're spending on construction is going to out-of-state contractors. The result of that drop, that decrease from 50.8% to 35.6%, that's a difference of over $31 million. So that's $31 million that could have gone to local businesses, that could have gone to the local economy, that went out of state. And for a point of comparison, the state of Delaware, for their construction contracts, 80.3% of their construction contracts go in-state to local contractors. So that's a big disparity. 80% for the state, 36% for the county. And so the result of this, in addition to excluding small businesses and moving money out of the local economy, we found that it's increasing costs for the county. How is it increasing costs? It's decreasing competition. Before this law was passed, the county got about as many bids per project as the state of Delaware. The state of Delaware gets 4.5 bids per project. Before this law, the county got 4.6 per project. Since this law was passed, the number of bids per project has decreased by 25% to 3.4 bids per project. So it means less competition, which means we get higher bids, which means we lose out on bidders who could give us a good bid on these projects, and it ends up costing us more. And just to show you how that's affecting the bidding process, these graphs illustrate the percentage of contracts that get a low number of bids. So let's look at contracts that get only one bid. Okay. State of Delaware, only 4.4% of their contracts get just one bid. Okay. In the county before this law was passed, it was about the same, 5.1%, just a little bit higher. Since this law was passed, it's more than doubled to 11.1%. So the number of contracts where there's really no competition whatsoever, just one bid, has doubled. Two bids or fewer, same situation. Before the law was passed, the county was similar to the state at about 17%. It's more than double more than 36% of contracts that have two bids or fewer, which means very little competition, which means you don't get a good price on the contract. Three bids or fewer, similar situation. The state was similar to the county before the law was passed, and the number of contracts that three bids or fewer shot up to 58.6% of contracts. So the majority of contracts are not getting very much competition. They're getting three bids or fewer. Now, I'm going to delve quickly into roofing because this is one example of a trade for which there is not a program available in Delaware. And these trades are particularly affected by this law. So for roofing, these are a few state projects. And you can see on these state projects, Governor Bacon Health Center, Hudson State Service Center, etc., they each got six or seven bids, and four in-state bids. So there's a fair amount of competition for state roofing contracts. And the county, before this law was passed, there was also a fair amount of competition for roofing projects. You see, these are three county roofing projects before the law was passed. You have five or six bids on each, three or five in-state bids. So not quite as much as the state, but close. Since this law was passed, the competition for roofing contracts has dropped extremely. You look at these three projects, they only got two or three bids each and no in-state bids. Basically, all the in-state contractors dropped out. They can't comply with the apprenticeship requirement and they can't bid. They were bidding on county projects before, they're not bidding on county projects now. So the competition has been decreased by a lot. And this example, the Kirkwood Library, illustrates how that is increasing costs. Kirkwood Library was done very soon after this law was passed, so a lot of contractors did not know about the requirement and bid anyway, even though they weren't eligible. And what we saw was a lot of disqualified bids. So with a structural steel contract, we disqualified a bid because of the apprenticeship requirement and had to award it to a bidder that was more than $80,000 more. with roofing. We just qualified a bid there too, and had to award it to bidders about $50,000 more. Concrete, same thing, but just qualification resulted in about an $80,000 increase. Taken together, those disqualifications resulted in about a 21% cost increase, about $210,000. And that probably understates it, because there are probably bidders that knew about the law and didn't bid. So it's possible it could have gotten even lower bids. And it's not just that we're losing out on low bids. It's not that we're losing out on low bids that we can get because people aren't coming to the table. The amount of the bids are going up. We're getting higher bids because eligible contractors will increase their bids because they know they don't have competition. If they have an apprentice program, they might know that there's only one or two contractors or none at all who can compete with them. And then you have to factor in the cost of hiring a new employee as an apprentice. That increases the bid price. And also it results in more subcontracting, the apprentice requirement. So that increases the cost. And like I said earlier, we're seeing a lot more out-of-state contractors, and out-of-state contractors place higher bids because of the travel and the inconvenience, as you saw in those previous examples. So that is also increasing the price. We're also seeing a lot of rebids and delays because we're not getting enough bids. One example is the Claymont Library is divided into 17 bid packages. For 9 of them, they had to rebid. 3 of them, they had to rebid again for a third time, and that was primarily a result of this apprenticeship requirement. And the result of all this was an increased cost and delay in about 3 months. More examples. I already mentioned the Barrett Library. A couple bid packages on there were delayed because the in-state contractors could not bid. The Rockwood Museum, in 2015, they needed specialty contractors with experience in historic preservation for some woodwork. No qualified contractors had the apprenticeship, so the county got no bids, and the project still has not been done. So in this case, the apprenticeship requirement has prevented the work from getting done, important work from getting done altogether. So what's the overall effect? What's the bottom line for the county? If you do an analysis of the bids before and after the passage of the law, you'll find that the decreased competition resulted in an average cost increase of 7.4% per project. And that's just the decreased competition, not including the cost of the higher bids and the delays that I mentioned. And again, another measure of decreased competition is in the Journal of Construction Engineering and Management, it estimates that with the bid decrease that we saw from 4.6 per project to 3.4, that results in a 7.56% increase in the cost of the project. Again, that is just decreased competition. The Special Services Project Administrator for the county estimates that when you take into account everything, not just the decreased competition, that results in a 17 to 19% cost increase. And therefore, we can conservatively estimate, based on those estimates, that it's costing the county about $2 to $5 million for fiscal year 2017. So it's moving business out of state, it's hurting small businesses, and it's costing county money. So to give a rundown of how the ordinance would modify that, well, again, the idea of this ordinance, it keeps the apprenticeship requirement, it continues to encourage contractors to hire apprentices, but it modifies it to mitigate the unintended consequences. So what it does is, first of all, under the existing law, the threshold is $100,000 for contractors and $50,000 for subcontractors, meaning that if your contract is above that amount, you're required to comply. And this ordinance raises that threshold to $1 million for contractors and $500,000 for subcontractors. The idea being that there are many small businesses who cannot afford apprentices because of their size and because of their limited resources, but they're perfectly capable of doing contracts of $200,000, $400,000, $600,000 or more, but they'd be shut out of the process. So that makes sure that they can bid. Secondly, the requirement under the current law applies to each trade or classification in which the bidder will employ craft workers for the special services contract. This ordinance makes two modifications. First, it applies the requirement just to the 9 trades for which apprenticeship courses are regularly available at VOTEC. The purpose of that is to ensure that Delaware contractors can bid on projects, that there's an opportunity for all contractors to comply with this law. And secondly, it only requires contractors to employ one apprentice, even if a contract includes more than one trade, because having to hire 3, 4, 5 apprentices just for one contract can be very financially impractical for a lot of companies. So, and then finally, well, I think this has been since been amended, but the apprenticeship requirement applies in rebid if there's no qualified bids. So if you have a project or a contract and it gets no bids, in the rebid, the apprenticeship requirement still applies. And under proposed ordinance, well, now under the rebid, we would be able to, that requirement would be waived so that we can make sure that the project actually gets done and we don't get no bidders a second time. So that is that. I hope I went fast enough. I'm sorry. I went too long.
Thank you.
Could you repeat that for me?
Yes. That's the joke.
No, I'm serious.
Mr. Hollins?
At this point, Madam President, we would ask that Jack Willows from the purchasing agents from Newcastle County, as well as Steve Rubel, county engineer, come forward to respond to questions from members of council. And I think at this point, the questions may be more directed to these two gentlemen and perhaps even the chief administrative officer, who may be better prepared to respond to what's happening on the ground.
Okay, in the future, please come to the go around the side and then come up to the podium. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Steve Rubel. I'm a project administrator with Special Services.
My name is Jack Wallace. I'm a purchasing agent for the Admin Services Department in Newcastle County.
Does anyone from council have questions or comments? Mr. Shelver?
Yes, look, I'm not going to do the whole thing, but can we at least say that we found two apprenticeable trades? I mean, everybody's got to agree we have notes on it. We have, I mean, at least you've got to expand just from the 7 or 8 that you're talking about, or I forget the number.
Nine.
It was 9. We had 2 that came up that I found that we have in the VOTEC system as far as the adult education. I mean, there's 2 there. And the elevators, again, are a national program. Nobody teaches it. But there is a course, not only union but non-union, that they go to. It's an online course. I mean, you read the same thing that you did before with no amendments to say, well, yet we found out these 2 things, or we don't have a sewer contract that can be lining, so we'll never get that. And again, if we just raise it to 125 as far as a trade, how does that affect the smaller, doesn't that raise the smaller contractors so they're able to compete and you don't need an apprenticeship program? I haven't seen a hardwood floor job at $250,000 in my life. Never. Carpet jobs. Never. And so that should be accounted for if you're just getting, you know, I could see upping it. I talked about it before. I think it's a heck of a compromise to come through here. If you're just going to give $1 million, hell, why have anything apprenticeable? Because you're just going to break it. You can break it up into contracts so nobody gets anything. Finishing trades used to be your hardwood. You would bid the job out and only have one contractor do the hardwood flooring, the tile, the carpet. Now we bid them out so they're increments anyway. So I don't see where $125,000 or $250,000 isn't workable for this ordinance. It would help out on those trades. There's no excuse why it would. I like to see the tile job that's $250,000. I mean, you take out terrazzo, tile's not that expensive. We never did talk about, you know, the inflation if it was put in there. I mean, we just read off the same slide. And we never, again, asked why the 30% of the contractors that are no longer bidding, why were they asked why they're not bidding the contracts. 30% of people that are still in business that bid in 98 do not bid here, and we've had the discussion over and over again because they just don't feel the law is being presented in their favor. And last but not least here, you know, bid solicitors, you're saying you're not, you're over budget and so forth. Look, you just go in the internet. We just built, we're building a bridge that was budgeted at $15 million and it's coming in at $30 million. It's coming across the riverfront. That is, and it's an out-of-state contractor. It's because people are not learning to trade enough. That's what they're all doing. It will lower the bids. We'll be over once. No, it's going to take years to do this. But don't say we don't award, the state doesn't award contracts. I mean, because that's the way it is. Rehoboth Beach just paid $2 million over budget because they didn't get good estimates. Engineers can just look through a book. There's a blue book. It's called a color book. You ever try to trade a car in? You go in there and say, this is what it says, 2,000. Oh, no, you're getting 1,500. That's the way you do business. It's not the real world. I'm saying the same thing about the engineering. You're going to see roofing. I said this before. You're going to see roofing. Other finishing trades going up in price because the skilled workforce is not there the way it was. There's a big gap between a small contractor and going up to the million-dollar contractor and the $10 million contractor. We have both ends at the steam, at the far ends on right and left, but we do not have a small contractor. I sit on the board of Solid Waste Authority, Western Y. We've had to, it's everything has been overestimated as far as the bids coming in. The estimates were too low, like, excuse me, the engineering. It's just the way it is. We have people here on council that has bid their homes out, bid out for work. What they do, they call me. Can you get me somebody better? Can this price is too high? I can't get nobody to do the stonework. They wanted $5,000 to do a chimney. People come in for $2,000. What do you happen? You're stuck on it. Okay, it's for value engineering. That's what happens. The reason why the prices are coming in is because it's not being taught as much. It's going to come back sooner or later. The education value of this, 50% of the kids that graduate school are now going to college, and 18% of those drop out. So you're going to have 70-some percent people that are not going to be in college. What do you do with these people? What do you do with the people that are in jail right now, prisons, that the unions are going in and teaching them pre-apprentice trades, and when they have come out, there's nothing to go on? If we keep this process, what's going to happen is unqualified people. It's got to happen. It's just nature. It's going to be done because we have computers. It's a lot easier to lay to do computers than lay brick, just the way it is. And, you know, God bless them, but there's not enough of those jobs. And you have to build. So if we don't go into this percentage-wise as far as people coming out of their time and going to work. One thing my father always said, now he wanted me to be an electrician, not a bricklayer, that he said, you know what? You can never take that trade away from you. You can stay away once you learn it for 10 years and come back and do the job. And that's what a trade does. You're granted, this is not taking away or putting any apprentices under out of work at the moment, but it will because they won't be able to get jobs. And they have to work. Again, 55% of the people that were in business in 2006 are no longer in business in the construction trades, second to the restaurant business. Anybody that knows that is what happens when you go in a recession. It's going to happen at the next recession. We used to have 40,000 construction workers in Delaware. We're now down to 12,000 people. Why? Because there wasn't work. So what happens when there is a boom? Guess what? They're all working and they're going out of state to work. So, look, this is all in a news journal. This isn't made up stuff. The bridge over Riverfront, I mean, you know, the over there is not made up. And he awarded it. People ask, why did he award it? Because, guess what? The next bid's going to come higher. Okay. I'm done. Look, there's no compromise. I asked for a compromise to go to 250 instead of a million. Nobody with the administration said no, they don't want to do it. And to put the trades that are actually in, you're cutting, like you said, two trades out. If you just kept the trades in there and just up the threshold there, 2 years, and put it in here, in 2 years, if it doesn't work, you sunset the bill. That's all. It's sunset all the time. But we've never enforced, like I said again, you haven't enforced the how many minorities are on a job. It is in the law. There's no quorum. You can't enforce that, but there's a minority component, it's called, in the law, and it's never been looked at. If not, why do they give us how many minorities are on a job? If we didn't ask for it in the law, it would not be given to us. So that's all that's being said here. I know there's not a law that you can put so many black people, so many Hispanics, so many whites, but it's in a law to give the virtue. And if somebody said there was one contract in the last 10 years, I'd like to see who that was. It's been disbarred. They disbar them all over the state, and guess where they come? They come here. So.
Are there no clapping, please? Are there any other comments or questions from members of council? Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to ask the representatives from Special Services. I know that you made the presentation, everything, but were you as representatives in Special Services to deal with the contractors and deal with the checks and balances? Did you have direct input or input in general into this legislation? And what I'm looking at as far as thresholds, as far as the different trades and everything being identified in or out, did either or both of you have, were you consulted, did you have input into the legislation that's being presented tonight?
Steve Rubel, Special Services Project Administrator. My role in, I guess, the part of this legislation is I simply responded to questions that Matt had for me. So if he asked me a question, I would give him facts on as far as contracts, as far as breakdown of the library projects that I've worked on. So anything that Matt was looking for, I would give him the facts. Opinions, everyone's going to have an opinion on this. My opinion's cut out of it.
But you gave him facts based upon your professional role in Special Services?
Yeah, based on the results of the bidding process, for example, what came out in the Bear Library renovation, the Claremont Library project, and as far as we are right now with the Route 9 Library.
And just the same question, sir.
Yeah, Jack Willis from Admin Services. Yeah, I provided basically the bid tab information, bid results to Matt, and that's basically it. You know, he'd asked for a project, or I guess I went back to as far as we had the electronic records without digging into paper files and trying to find tenure records. But, you know, everything electronic we had on the bids that we opened, I provided the information.
Okay. I want to thank them for their answer, but I guess the question I'm leading into here is that based upon the deliberations we've had in council, based upon public comment and our professionals both in labor and the private sector, I've learned a lot sitting here this evening. And while I think that the presentation has some good substance in it, I think that tonight has raised a lot of questions and a lot of things that I think that need to be taken back to the drawing table. And the reason I say that is that there's two folks in here tonight, both Councilman Hollins and Councilman Street. There's no one in this council that are more compassionate about diversity and equality. And they fought for this the entire time that they've been on council. I don't think, in all honesty, I don't think that this legislation is ready to be voted upon tonight. And the reason I say that is I think there should be, based on what I've heard tonight, is that we not only have a responsibility to work in the county to labor, we have a responsibility to our private sector, our small business. But I think if we brought some of these folks together, the professionals in the trades, the professionals in the private sector, we've heard questions now about the cap. Should it be $1 million? Should it be $250,000? Tim has extensive experience in construction and the trades. And so when he's looking at different facets of construction and what the typical costs are, aren't these things that if we had a small committee, a small group, to kind of revisit what we have on the books for tonight and make some adjustments to try to protect and work with our apprenticeships, which I do think are important. They're significantly important. Anytime you provide educational opportunities, it's important for the future. But at the same time, I've got many, many smaller contractors and businesses in my district and throughout the county that have a right to work and to bid and to have jobs for their people and their families. So I guess the long and short of this is that I don't personally feel that based upon everything that I've heard tonight that we're there. I don't think we're ready tonight. If I had a recommendation, it would be that we possibly table this legislation and not eliminate it, because I think that Councilman Hollins, like I said about Councilman Hollins, Councilman Street, Councilman Hollins has brought out some very significant points. There are some things that I think this council needs to go back to special services and to this county as a whole and question what kind of a job we're doing and how effective and efficient in overseeing things that we're doing, that we're responsible for, because I think there's a lot of things that have happened that shouldn't be happening in this county. And I'm not going to fault anybody in particular. I heard what the state law is, but I also understand that we have a responsibility under legislation that this council passes to enforce and work within the confines of that legislation. So my suggestion, Madam President, and to this council, is I'd like to ask consideration of the sponsor. And I know it's a tough thing to do, because I think that, you know, we're at a point where we've come a long way. But I think we've got a little further to go. I think this is a new administration that would be, I think, doing a credit to this council, to the trades, to our private sector, by taking a little bit more time and getting a little bit more input and listening to a few more people that have lived this, that understand it, and then work together to try to bring this back in its proper form. And so, like I say, my recommendation tonight, and hearing what I've heard, is that I would love to see this legislation tabled for whether it's 2 weeks or a month. I don't say put it in table forever. I don't say withdraw it. But I think it needs to be modified properly. To sit here tonight and try to make amendments to piecemeal, I don't think it's the right way to do it. I think we have an obligation. We have trust me, I think you all know me by now that, you know, I just think that there's work to be done. We can do it collectively. We can do it in a collaborative manner. And we can end up with a good piece of legislation. And I would support it in a heartbeat once we get there. But I don't think we're there yet.
No, only mine. No clapping. Mr. Powers?
I got a couple questions. One is to Steve. We were in a meeting yesterday, and he said it was over the paramedic station in southern Newcastle County and about splitting the bid up. And what is the reason for splitting the bid, and where are you splitting it? And I still have some other questions, too.
Okay. And I'd like to make a statement, too. Through qualified and recognized apprenticeship programs, the county has access to supervised, skilled, and qualified workers. Under the supervision of skilled journeymen, these apprenticeships are able to perform work safely and economically while keeping on the path to a sustainable career. Weaken responsible contractors law, such as Ordinance 17021, place Newcastle County at risk of higher costs due to unsafe job sites and lower quality workmanship. Newcastle County benefits from apprenticeship programs. Apprenticeships lead to good-paying jobs, grow our middle class, and ensure safe, quality work. We can't run the government like a business. Our goal is not to maximize profit, it's to maximize the value of the government for the citizens we serve. If this has a cost to Newcastle County, it will cost some money. Yet we can lift people out of poverty and provide dignity, and with an apprenticeship program, make them productive members of society. Then we should be doing more of this, not less. Apprenticeships give people dignity, a way to provide for their family, and it helps to fight crime at the same time. And I'd like to also address, and I'm just disappointed in the way the executive side, Mr. Meyer, handled this ordinance, this vote. And I'm going to share this because I don't want to see this happen again. I was asked to come to Mr. Meyer's office, and I had asked for to meet with him to discuss, this was before the budget address, to meet with him about the budget. I wanted the unfilled, fully funded vacant positions, 130 of them, for him to take a look at that and cutting that to save some money. And it might have been over approximately $7 million that we could save in, towards the deficit. But instead, Mr. Meyer changed the discussion. And Mr. Rosen was there. And he said to me that if I voted against this, that he would cut all the capital projects in the county, and that he would tell people that this was that because of me. And, you know, I take exception to that. You know, this is, if you cut capital projects, it's not just because of my vote. I have a right to how I feel and to how I vote. That impacts and does harm to every citizen in the county.
All right, point of order. Me. Can we return to the legislation, please?
I have a right to say.
You have a right to speak on the legislation and quit campaigning, all right? Can
this
we speak to the legislation?
This is about something wrong.
The bottom line is, the county executive can't cut the capital. This council controls the budget. You don't know that yet, but let's move back to the legislation. Can we move on to the legislation?
Mr. Smiley, out of order.
Yes.
Yeah, take that for
I have a right to share my experience. I don't want to see this happen again. And if other council members are also being asked or threatened to not vote a certain way or provided incentives to vote a certain way, that's a problem.
You've got zero credibility with me.
Well, Mr. Smiley, we won't go there.
You damn right.
Uh-oh.
Out of order, Mr. Smiley.
Is that in your script? Because I know somebody had to write it for you. Now can we move on to the legislation, please?
Mr.
Can I get...
Mr. Smiley?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. You don't know what we're going.
Do you need to be asked to be removed?
What?
Go for it. But you better make sure you've got standing.
Next, Mr. Powers.
I had a question. It was an answer.
But that's not
you're going to have to repeat it. I was in a meeting yesterday with a paramedic station for Southern Newcastle County, and it was said that they were going to split the bid for the paramedic station.
Yeah, understood. Steve Rubel, Special Services Project Administrator. Yeah, the reason why we're doing that is because there's a section in our standard specifications that requires a contractor to perform at least 51% of the work. So on certain projects, say for instance the Rockwood Mansion project where it's ultimately going to be predominantly carpentry work, we can bid that out to a general contractor, a carpenter, who would do the majority of that work. And there may be some other trades that are smaller enough that they can fall within that 49%. And that carpenter can do the 51% of the work. With the paramedic station, we can't accomplish that. There are too many trades involved, and so there's no way that one contractor within their firm is able to do enough trades to cover 51% of the work. So initially, we had considered that a long time ago, but we understand that we can't accomplish that. So we're basically the same approach that we're doing on the paramedic stations that we've done on previous major projects, and that is bid out all the trade packages as separate packages.
What is the cost for the paramedic station?
The
budget, well, I've got to go from memory here. I think the budget is at $6.5 million. That's the total costs, all costs involved, not just construction, but all the soft costs.
How many times are you going to split it?
How many trade packages are we going to have? We're still working that out, but it's probably going to be somewhere around 15 to 20.
So every one of them would be under $1 million.
Yeah, for the paramedic station, that would be correct. Even if we tried to split it up into 5 or 10, which really wouldn't be feasible or tenable based on all the different trades, you're still not going to hit the million. And there's really no way to bid it out to a GC based on, you know, what I said previously.
I have to, you know, I'm a co-sponsor on this. I was wanting the cap to come up. I was not wanting the trades to be pulled out of there. I've voiced this ever since. But I have to agree, after some of this and different things that Councilman Bell said, I would like for it to be tabled, but I think the sponsor would have to do that and work, you know, go to the table and start working on this. Okay.
Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Madam President. Just one question to follow up on the paramedic station. That this council approve the location 13-0 based upon the public safety department's recommendations, in particular paramedics and special services. Was this the manner in which the Kirkwood Library paramedic station was handled? Were all the trades subbed out, or was there one general contract?
I believe the paramedic station is part of the Kirkwood Library project, which was before my time, but it was all bid out together. But it was separate trade packages. So I don't believe they bid out the EMS stations separately and bid out the library separately. It was all together.
All together with one general contractor?
Separate trade packages.
But with one general contractor?
No, with separate trade packages.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just the EMS station is an addition onto the library, but it was all considered one building and bid out with separate trade packages. You understand?
No.
What I'm saying? It was basically bid out with separate trade packages, the same way we've done the Route 9 library,
right.
The Claymont Library Bear.
This bears further discussion, and whether it's in special services or public safety, I want to see things go forward, not backwards. And so this is a whole other conversation, but
Mr. Smiley.
I don't understand.
Yeah, I will support whatever Councilman Hollins as a primary sponsor wants to do with this legislation tonight. But and I don't know if he's made up his mind, but I would ask this. Should the primary sponsor decide to table this, I would ask that it be tabled with a date certain or as close to certain as we can. Point being, I'm not looking to rush everybody, but I'm not looking to hang to have this, and I don't think anyone else is hanging out there for 6 months as the boogeyman in the back room. So if he does decide to table it, I would ask that he put some type of deadline by which it would be coming back to try to move the parties to the table to have the discussion and get it resolved one way or the other. Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Hollins.
Thank you, Madam President. I want to appreciate the comments from my colleagues here. If I do decide to table it, it will be to a date certain. I just want to comment that, as I said earlier, we voted for a responsible contractor ordinance 10 years ago. Councilman Street and I, in particular, were pushed to the very end to vote for this. Our very concern was exactly what this ordinance has done to the minority community. The numbers that we have don't lie. What's being done on Route 9 does not lie. The Route 9 library built in a community that's 69% African American, with less than 10% of African Americans employed there. That is disgraceful. The $1 million that we sent to New Jersey If it was in this economy, it would turn over several times in Newcastle County. Right now, it's turning over in New Jersey. While we got people in this county needing work, we have veterans in this county, and people say that, well, the apprentice program is the golden savior. If that was the case, then the apprentice program, whether in employment, is needed the most, but have more than 10% African Americans in the apprentice program. This is a farce, but it's happened. Every time special services come to that committee room upstairs, the same questions go around. Why don't we have more minorities employees? It started with the building that's called the Public Safety Headquarters. That building was done by major big companies here in Newcastle County. That building, we would never stop paying for it because they made all kind of mistakes. To sit here and decide that because you are a small business, this government's responsibility is to put an impediment towards small business for the advantage of big business. The fact of the matter is, the people in this county that are not working is the people that need to work the most, and is a result of this legislation. The few people that got a job here, they're part of that less than 10%, they are very happy. Apparently, they don't care about their neighbors.
Wow.
If you're in this particular position, you would certainly want the people who live in your neighborhood to have a job as opposed to someone who live across the bridge. That is the reality we're talking here. What we've gotten down to now, we've changed the narrative, because now it's about labor versus merit shop. That's another whole discussion for the people that are involved with labor and merit shops. When we did the grant, the loan to the Petnera company that redid the old courthouse right here in Rodney Square, when they got the $27 million, when I drive by there on a daily basis, there was no black people working there. There was no black people taking a job there, to be very frank about it, until I called Mr. Petnera and asked him, how do you come to the county to take advantage of a federal program when there's no black people there working on that job, and the black people in the east side of Wilmington, that's in their front yard? He balked because I asked him to give us a diversity program. Members of this council sitting here tonight agreed with that. That was held up until Mr. Petnera came forward with a diversity program. And there's a witness here in the audience tonight who I had this argument and debate with on behalf of Mr. Petnera and with Mr. Petnera. To sit here tonight, ignore the fact that the numbers for the minority community are not where they should be. If you can't get 10% in a community that's 69% African American, where in the world are you going to get it? How do you justify having only 36% of construction dollars being spent in this county going to local business? And it's okay to spend 58%, 59% of the dollars from the construction on Route 9 to New Jersey, when people in that community represents perhaps one of the highest unemployment areas in Newcastle County, and that's okay? The issue here is much bigger than what we're talking about between labor, whether you open shop, free shop, union, whatever the case may be. The fact of the matter is, the people that should be working, should be included, are not being included. That is a fundamental fact. The people who live down there, who see the trucks going and coming, they see the New Jersey tags. They complain to Councilman Street about the lack of participation from people that live in that community. That is the reality. I don't know how much more studying we need, but the fact of the matter is, we need to stop asking the question upstairs on the 8th floor of special services, because quite frankly, I would disagree with Councilman Sheldon. That legislation does not make any reference whatsoever to minorities of any shade whatsoever. It makes no reference to a disadvantaged business whatsoever. All of that was language. It was verbatim. They said all of that to Councilman Street. It's a 12-page document, but it does not mention none whatsoever, not one single time, any inclusion in that legislation. It does not speak to it whatsoever. People have been misled about what's going on here. That ordinance did not create apprenticeship programs. It cannot eliminate apprenticeship programs. That is a farce to begin with. That's just decided deliberately to change the narrative here. What we're talking about here, as far as I'm concerned, is equity. There is no equity in a neighborhood that is not allowed to work on a public-funded project in their neighborhood. There is no equity in a system that no longer allows for minority or black contractors to participate. There is no equity. The issue for me is one of equity. So the people who own the businesses, who are competing with each other, that's their business. That is not the government's business to take sides in this particular debate. You have a better product, you're going to sell it more. That is what's going on in that side of the equation. But if you look at what's going on in Newcastle County, and we say this all the time, upstairs on the 8th floor, if we're not sincere about it, then why are we asking the question? Why do we continue to ask the people up there, well, you're not following what we want you to follow? But when we have an opportunity to put it in law so they will have to follow it, we don't do it. So we keep asking the question upstairs, and they keep staring back at us. Understand why they're staring back at us, because we never put it in the legislation to begin with. We talked about it. They're not going on what we talk about. They're going on what's in the legislation. So that is where we are. If I do decide to table it, it will be for a date certain. We've been talking about this for over and over and over again. We didn't start this with this particular piece of legislation. We talked about this for years to increase the threshold to allow for minorities to participate, to allow for black-owned businesses to participate. Who shut out? They are shut out. In this county, you mean to tell me that we don't have 1% of black-owned businesses contracted with Newcastle County, Delaware, and we're spending millions of dollars on construction projects? Is that okay with the people sitting here? There's something fundamentally unfair with that, and you wonder why? They're being denied the opportunity to participate for opportunities for projects that their tax dollars are paying for. That is very real. That is what the message will show. There's no way of getting around that. I don't know how much more we need, because we've been talking about this for years. The $1 million came from the procurement officers, by the way, both were black, the one that just left and the one before that, who said even 8 years ago, we need to up the threshold to $1 million. Even when you up the threshold to $1 million, most of the contracts in Newcastle County are over $1 million anyway. So you still don't have any equity. So I don't know how much more studying we need. And when I went to the county exec and told him, we need to do this, we need to be more inclusive, the county exec felt that with the amount of money that we're losing, this should not even be a program in Newcastle County. People in this county who can't get work, who pay taxes in this county, can work in the other counties, and they can work for the state of Delaware. But they can't work in Newcastle County because of this flawed law. Before this law, it's very clear they had a much greater opportunity to work in Newcastle County. And this is the only area of Newcastle County that have minority participation at less than 10%, have minority contractors at less than 1%. Other areas of Newcastle County, minority contractors do have 8% participation on the contractor side. That is low. We've gone to a new low now to say we're in this construction project, it's going to be less than 1%. We're going to say that in the construction industry in Newcastle County, where we have 24% black population, only 12% of them can work in the construction industry. There's something wrong with that picture. I haven't decided if I'm going to table it or not tonight or not, but I'm very frustrated by the miscalculation and misinformation that's gone out to people, and people applauding as if they know that this is going to benefit them. And the numbers are indicating it does not, and it will not. And maybe that's happy for some people. If you think that your economy is going to get better by sending your money to another jurisdiction, then there's something flawed about that. The people on this council should know better, because they have the information. We see the information. We get the reports. I have the latest report from the Route 9 library. And if you haven't read that, then you probably don't know what's going on. That's what's going on. All this other stuff that everybody's talking about is what they think and what they heard. If you get the reports, then you'll know
what's going on. If you believe what somebody tell you and not paying attention to what's really going on, I would suggest you go out to Route 9 and see for yourself. And the next bill we get, this is not going to make it any better. If we get around to building the library in the southern part of the county, we're going to have the same results down there as we have on Route 9. If we ever get an opportunity to build, to do the Rockwood Museum, Councilman Carter, yeah, I know something that you really want to get done. We're not going to get it done. I'm not going to support a waiver for spot projects, whether it be in Rockwood or whether it be down in Glasgow Park. We're going to get this straight, and it will not be because there's going to be some special arrangement for special projects in certain parts of this county. This county is going to be inclusive, and it's going to be absolutely certain that these numbers are going to go up.
Mr. Sheldon.
Okay, and that was a good, and you know, some of that I actually agree with, but I don't know if Mr. Hollins is, you know how you get a job in construction? You go across the street with a building, and you knock on a door and say you hire. There's no big deal. 24% of that job was, as he said, union shop. What about the other 76% non-union? We take that blame too? That's nah. It doesn't work that way. You go over, and that's how I got my first job. Went after school, guy's laying blocked over there. My dad said, you're going to work today. I got you a job over there. I asked him. That's how we got into the trade. That's how 90% of the people go in, unless they go through high school or go through a VOTEC. But most of the people just knock on the door. There's no forms. There's no check the box. You know, we pass a check the box wall here. Go to a construction site. My God, I'm going to say probably 40% of them have a record. That's just the way it is because you can't get another job anywhere. So this is just a fallacy, too, on the facial. It doesn't matter because when you go out and ask for a job, you either get hired or you don't. If you go to a shop that is unionized, that is correct. But when there's only 24% on that job is dictated from a union hall, how come the other 76? How come the other 76 doesn't get graded here? They're in here. How come they're not asked this?
Okay, no clapping.
Let's put it on.
No clapping.
I agree. If you want to put a minority component on there, I'll back you. I swear to God, I'll back
local
you.
Hire.
I was at local hire. We can put that in there. That could be the new bill. But you cannot put in there by lawyers that drafted this original bill to put that in there. That's the quota system. They told me no, or we would have did it. And the federal government mandates apprentices, and that's what I thought, has to have so many minority participants. If you're telling me the state's not abiding by the federal laws, then we have to go to our elected officials here and say, why isn't this being done? I think it's a trickle-down thing that we're not looking at. But, I mean, there's no form that you sit down, take a test, or do this. Not one person ever came to me and said, well, I'm really a bum, please get me a job. No, they're the greatest thing that ever happened. You hire them, after a week or so, you know if the person knows his trade or not. Or he goes somewhere else. And somebody said that blacks were being paid less than whites. This is a prevailing wage job. Tell us where this is. These people got to go to jail, these contractors, and be deported. This is what I'm saying. You're not enforcing the law. If that side's true, if that's completely true, whatever the sheet metal person makes, for one, they make another. And then the foreman makes a dollar more. The apprentices, where you do save the money, are anywhere between 50% and 100%, depending on their skill level. So it works both ways. That's all.
Thank you. Mr. Woods, did you have your hand up? Mr. Street.
Too long. 25 years.
And what I heard from you, my brother, is 25 years of frustration, pent up anger, and I don't know how you did it. I've only been here 12, and I'd have probably went out of here in handcuffs if I had to deal with what you had to deal with. This whole conversation has gotten ugly.
Yes.
It's gotten political.
Yes.
but it still remains unfair. Now, coming in office, coming behind you, I looked at what I saw from the very beginning, and I said, there's got to be an increase in black paramedics. There's got to be an increase in diversity in hiring. I want a library. And there's got to be an increase in improvement in the percentage of minority participation in procurement. Councilman Shelton, to your credit, when I started raising sand about the public safety building, you said, what do you care who the contractors are? We want to know who's working. And you were correct. And when we put that in, the participation at the public safety building went from zero to 20-something almost overnight. That's progress. We made some progress with the last paramedic class. We just got an African-American police chief. And part of the problem, and I've said this to some folks in the room privately, and I don't say things privately, I won't say publicly. Part of the problem with the library was it was contentious, and I asked the previous administration to fast track it, because I knew, given some of the contentious factions across this county, if I didn't have steel in the air by the time the primary was over, I might not have no library. So quite frankly, at the time, I didn't care who was working. I wanted my library. But I am exasperated and PO'd about the fact that every civic association meeting I go to, somebody meritoriously is saying, there's no blacks working. Nobody from this community is working. And I sat out there for, just before they started pouring concrete, and somebody was monitoring something for the unions or whatever, and the trucks that sat out there outside the library, whoever they were monitoring for, they had jersey tags. If you go in there now and see who's working, it's a whole lot of out-of-state tags. Now, I appreciate, and Steve, is not a reflection on you, because you've done a heck of a job with the design, construction of the library, and I'm forever grateful to the previous administration, this administration, going back to Paul Clark, and especially this council, for bringing the library to fruition, because quite frankly, until the steel was in the air and I was almost covered, I wasn't sure. But now, there's a question about that primary objective about changing the level of diversity and the level of participation. What we're suffering more from anything else is excusitis. There's one excuse after another, and nobody really cared. Nobody was watching the store until he comes forward with this new legislation. Now it's all wrong. And the fact of the matter is, based on the questions I asked today, nobody was watching the store and nobody cared. And the questions weren't an indictment of this administration for not watching the store. It's an indictment of what hasn't happened over the last 10 years. But at the end of the day, either there's a commitment to make a change or there's not. Now, I know when I went to Hilltop, and I know folks hate me making this analogy, but that's what I do. It's my point of reference. Hilltop was 100% African American community center. And all of a sudden, I had black kids shooting at Hispanic kids, and I said, the only way this is going to stop is these children have to grow up together. And I purposely and intentionally changed the front line so it was diverse, and now that agency is 60% African American, 40% Hispanic. It took commitment. I know that the same commitment I have here, I have in hiring people to maintain that building. And so I have
an African-American contractor who does most of the maintenance in the building. I have an a Hispanic janitorial service. I have African-American roofers. I've had African-American companies doing concrete work. It takes commitment. Well, there has been no commitment as far as we're concerned as a government. That's what has to change. It has to change. And as long, and Steven, no reflection on you, I want to emphasize that because that library wouldn't have got fast track if you weren't driving the train. But so long as special services is Lily White from top to bottom, and so long as folks in special services can write racial slurs here, make racial statements here, and nothing done about it, nothing is going to change. Now, county exec didn't create this, but he asked for the job. He was given the job. Now it's our responsibility to work collectively to do the job and make the change. I have been promised. I wanted that library desperately. I also added on and said that I wanted senior living in the Route 9 corridor. Whatever happened with the library is not right, not fair, but ain't nobody going to get no rest from me if we go into that senior living and there's no diversity. And there's not an opportunity for people to live there, to work there. And it's a matter of commitment, but I think overall as a council, we have like minds when it comes to fairness, but it's a question of how we get there. And we can figure that out. It's up to you, senior councilman, what you want to do, but I feel your pain over 20-some years, and I've only had half of it. And I, for one, appreciate everything you've done, everything you've tried to do to make a difference, but you ain't by yourself no more, brother.
No clapping? Any other comments or questions from council members? Okay, we will move on to the public. Thank you. Please come forward one at a time.
Just make sure you get your names and the rest of the stuff. Thank you. Three minutes. You can put as much as well. Just make sure you get
please state your name.
No, it's up to you.
And you'll have 3 minutes.
Hi, my name is Angela Parker. I feel like I just sat through a filibuster because it just doesn't make any sense. I am a woman. I am a minority. I am a completed apprenticeship member and a proud card-carrying member of Laborers Local 199. And now that you want to talk about Route 9, I've lived on Route 9 for 50 years. So your pain ain't no greater than mine. I'm just so sick of all of this, and I'm tired, and it's just a lot. So anyway, I just wrote a couple of comments down. And my first comment is, if there is no minority clause in the current agreement, why is that your main concern now? I just don't understand that. I don't need an answer because you'll talk too long. Now, my second clause is, how long exactly will it take for a small business of your number, 5.8 people, who can't afford to hire an apprentice, going to take to complete a $1 million contract? Anyone? Okay, my third concern is, since there's no current oversight committee actually governing the enforcement of the hiring of women, minorities, or apprentices, how will that be handled on any new contracts that will be rewarded? First of all, 5 years ago, there was no housing local, but we now have one in Delaware. I don't know whether you know that is, well, through apprentices, and most houses have roofs. So if you have the need for roofers, why not invest in these people in Newcastle County by investing in a labor program that will teach them how to make these rules? I don't get it. And also 5 years ago in Delaware, they didn't have any type of highway work. Right now we're building a new 301 with apprentices that has a New Jersey contractor, but most of the workers are here from Delaware. I think at the last count it was 31 apprentices on that job. And let me see. You talk about diversity out there. If Newcastle County is 24.6% black, where's diversity in here?
Thank you. Next. No clapping. Please come up and state your name. 3 minutes.
My name is Brother Deborah Abdul-Akbar. I represent Delaware's 10,000 Fearless, and I speak for those that are downtrodden and those that are out there on the corners without a job. And I just can't understand how we could afford to give extra money to an out-of-state contractor to come here and work when you can't give that same money to local contractors to be able to afford to hire somebody that's in an apprenticeship program. I can't understand where that makes sense. I can't understand how we could sit here and spend almost 5 hours talking about something that does not have an immediate or and a lasting impact on the residents of Delaware that's unemployed. I'm saying black and white, Hispanic, Mexican, and what have you. You have contractors that we are bringing here from out of state that we don't know what kind of apprenticeship programs these people have been through, but they say they've been through apprenticeship programs, but most of them are nothing but modern day slaves that these people are bringing in here and giving no wages and things of this nature. If people were put in an apprenticeship program, they would know how much they are worth and be able to demand that instead of letting other people come in here and do this work and get rich off of our blacks, off of our backs and off of our tax dollars. I'm saying I pay taxes, I'm on disability now, but I paid my tax dollars. They still take tax money from me because I still receive a check from my job because I was fully invested in my job. But people need to be trained. Trained people need to be on these jobs because it falls back on us when they go back out of state because they didn't hurt themselves on the job here in Delaware. Delaware has to pay them unemployment and disability and things of this nature. But I just want to know, when are we going to start considering making these requirements the benefit to people of this city, this county, and this state? All of this that we are talking about, nothing has been said that's going to affect Pookie down on the corner that don't have no job. It's not going to affect the 60 brothers out there in Newcastle looking at those, looking at the 9 brothers that's working against, I ain't gonna say all white, but they don't look like them. I'm saying, okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
Next. Please state your name.
My name is Cheyenne Mayo. I'm a carpenter of Local 173. Now, through the discussions that have gone through tonight, I'd like to express some concerns with some of the positions that people are on. See, I went to Hudson Boat Tech for carpentry, so I have vocational training. I worked about a year and a half non-union, and I joined the union specifically for my apprenticeship. See, because I went through a state apprenticeship, and I was like, you know, you kind of like show up every day, but when you start to get devoted training, you start to get certifications, you get teachers that want you to succeed, then you start to become a better worker. You see, skilled labor isn't cheap, and cheap labor isn't skilled. Okay? So if you want to have a project You want to have a project that goes through on budget, on time, that's right, that you don't got to go back the second time, you're going to go to skilled labor. So when he's saying that we have Newcastle County 24% black, right, you know, I'm black, I went to my local, I said, I need a job. I got a job. You know, it ain't that hard. The employers are there. If they don't want to get a job, they're not going to have a job. Okay? So it doesn't matter if we have 1,000 black people or 1,000,000 black people. If only 10 of them go out to go to get a job, only 10 of them are going to go get a job. So the vocational training, the apprenticeship training is very important. They teach you safety. They teach you all these different types of skills, scaffolding, everything. Just like the gentleman made about the Boilermaker that exploded. What would have happened if they had a skilled worker making that Boilermaker? I bet you it wouldn't explode it. Okay? So when you have all these skilled labor just being kind of demonized here, saying that, oh yeah, well, now we're going to disincentivize the companies to hire apprentices, what do you think the outcome of that is going to be? Because I remember a time, well, I wasn't alive, but I remember a time when safety wasn't necessarily the biggest concern. And I've lost family members because of that. Now, the apprenticeship program is not just there to make you money, it's not just there to teach you skills, it's there to bring you home at the end of the day. And you're going to have to live with the consequences of that if you vote for this legislation. Thank you.
No clapping, please. No clapping. Next.
Good evening. My name is James Marvellis. I'm the president of the AFL-CIO. I'm the president of Delaware Building Trades. I'm the business manager of the Labor's District Council, represents three locals in Delaware, and I'm also the business manager of Local 199. There's not one of you in this room that puts black people to work like I do. That's how I get paid. Those are my members you're talking to out there. And to correct Mr. Street, the problem with those vehicles out there wasn't the guys that were monitoring the job. They happened to be in a fleet vehicle that's just purchased in New Jersey. But those were members, and one of those members lives in Penrose Highlands District. We were monitoring that job for 6 months. This is the minority report from, you all get it, all of you, January to February at the end. Four contractors in here out of the 42 are union contractors. 38 are merit. We don't know whether they're my friend Eddie's people or they're just from wherever. It doesn't matter. The point of the matter is those four union contractors represented 25% of the minorities on those jobs in Newcastle County. All the other ones, 11%. So this isn't a matter of a contract or a law or this little smoke and mirrors act up there. I didn't have to go to Las Vegas to see. This has to do with a law. So if everybody wants to put their big pants on and do the fiduciary for the people that are in this room and in this county, pass a community workforce agreement that will make them have to hire people from the community. But when Jay Street put that in September, even you, Mr. Hollins, wouldn't back that bill, and he had to pull it in September. And that would have took care of minorities in Newcastle County. It's disgusting that we have to play the white against the black. It's disgusting. My 52 apprentices increased, Mr. Hollins, because of that bill. We went from 15, and my apprentice director, Curtis Hill, is sitting right there. We went from 15 apprentices to 52, almost now to 60. I don't need Mr. Myers to come in and tell me how to put people to work. That's what I do day in and day out. And my apprentices will testify to that. Thank you.
Next, and will the next person come in and sign in while the one person is speaking, please? Thank you. Please state your name in 3 minutes. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Kenyetta Artis. I am a apprentice field coordinator in Delaware. I also work in New Jersey. I started off in the apprentice program in 2006. I knew nothing about construction. I got the best training from the best instructors who go international to get certified. I learned the building trade. I worked on many buildings commercially and also heavy highway. The apprentice program is awesome, and I think you need to keep it. I've seen a lot of contractors who came in and they got the job done safe. They sent their workers home safe due to the apprentices who are skilled laborers. And that's what you need to really consider. We go out there and we put our life on the line. However, we do it safely because we got trained. We are certified. Okay? And it's not just a job. I have a career now due to this apprentice program. I'm not going to keep you long, but thank you.
Thank you. No topic. Next.
Please come up, state your name, and 3 minutes. And can the next gentleman come up and sign in?
He already is.
Okay. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is John Blyden. I'm a lead organizer for Labor's Local 55, a residential local, and also the state chair for the labor, I'm the state labor chair for the NAACP. My predecessors didn't really leave a lot of meat on the bones, but what I want to talk about is, in this policy, when you start talking about roofing and all the other trades, we have an apprenticeship program, a state-approved residential apprenticeship program, one of only two in the country. I had so many conversations with Tony Gardner from the past administration. I actually met the lady from the economic development. She didn't have a card, and she told me, actually, you know what? It's your responsibility to find the jobs. So this thing here, to me, seems to be a joke and a game, because if they really wanted to put minorities to work, they could have called me, they could have called our local, and we could have assisted.
Also, three times,
what I hate to see here is that they Trojan horse and scapegoat the minority contractors. I have so many contractors that when they get on big projects, what happened, the good old boys then paid them after 90 days, 120 days, they don't have the bond. I mean, they make it so hard for minority contractors to succeed. So if this thing is about minority contractors and their success, let's put some real programs together. Let's get them hooked up with a bank where they can help them on a bond. Let's hook up a supply company that can go ahead and per this contract can make direct payments on their supplies. There are some creative things that we can really do to lift the boats up of minority contractors. But just trying to undercut the workforce that we're trying to put to work, to me, is irresponsible. So the one thing, Councilman Jay Street, you know, I'm actually starting an organization called LEAP, and we're going to have public meetings about this, because when Jay Street proposed that bill, that was a local hire bill, I saw that as one of the solutions. What was really sad was, when that bill got pulled, it was like a tree falling in a forest and nobody around. Those days are over. The community will be watching. They will be informed. You have people here that didn't know that raising it to $1 million, all that's going to do is open it up for contractors that don't want to use apprenticeship programs. There was a contractor back there, the guy with the white hair. He has an apprenticeship program, but he's against the bill. And I said, why? He said, well, I don't want to be told to. The reason why they don't want to be told to, I'm willing to guess that they'll go get an apprenticeship for the job because this is a requirement, and then when this job is over, bye-bye. So I think if the county really monitor this program, we find out who got legitimate programs and who don't. Thank you.
No clapping. No clapping.
Please, no clapping. Thank you.
Well, I ain't said nothing yet.
Well, I've been saying it, but the clapping's been pretty loud, so.
Yeah. Good evening. My name is Jeff.
Councilman Owens and some others have reminded me that we need to not have clapping in between.
My name is Ken Dryden, and I'm a Delaware concerned resident. First of all, I want to thank the council for allowing the public to speak. And I want to thank Penrose and Jay and all the rest of the
a councilman who may have been here to, we heard the councilman say that for 10 years now, they had voted on a bill that they thought was going to do one thing, but it did another. And tonight the guy gave a presentation that spoke about some of the numbers even being lower than they were then, after the 10 years when they thought it would be better for African Americans and minorities on the job. Certainly, I'm not going to sit here and say, you can see I'm old enough and I've been in Delaware all my life to say that things have not been fair. And for folks to sit here and want to give an appearance or talk like it is untrue. I would hope that Councilman, senior sponsor Penrose, who I've known for quite some time, would go and put the right language if it's not in there, because he said before, and it may be in there, Penrose, I don't know. You know better than I know. But I know you want what's best for the folks here in Delaware, UNJ, and a lot of the other ones. So if that be the case, then let's make the legislation and put the language in there so that it will benefit folks and bring about fair and change for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you. Next. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam President, and distinguished members of council. I'm Gerald Brady. I'm the Executive Director of the Delaware State AFL-CIO, and I come before you this evening to urge you, as one of your colleagues has already suggested, to table the bill this evening, and I'll articulate the reasons why. In four general areas, the economy, budget, education, and society, has already been identified that this bill, the initial bill, or I should say the current code section, was drafted 10 years ago under the Coons administration, and certainly with the most sincere intentions. And it was designed specifically to encourage and to improve. Yet to date, it has fallen short of its designated objectives. Certainly, as was illustrated tonight with elaborate detail, the research that was done, I guess in many cases, to illustrate why it was not successful, that it is suggested that the alternative, your bill this evening, 17-021, would be an attractive alternative. I suggested, quite frankly, at this point, it may not be. And I'll tell you why. I'll articulate those reasons in the following remarks, and then I'll conclude. I did notice tonight, and it was actually mentioned, Council Member, that some of the statistics or some of the data may have been incomplete. I'm not suggesting that that was done to dissuade you or persuade you in one fashion or form, but I did note from occasion that there were some statistics that could have been a bit more articulate. I, like all of you, have had some experience in this very chamber and down below. I know that many of you as legislators come to these chambers on most nights having already decided on a piece of legislation or had a general idea. So if I'm able to persuade one or two of you to think another way, I would consider my act of God. But I do encourage you to think about it and think about it deeply tonight. I also caution you that I've heard two objectives tonight. One is the objective to promote minorities. And then I saw a clear indication that this was a budgetary bill. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but I do have a little bit of a concern because it skews many of the remarks and comments that have already been made. Just keep in mind, this is about quality and quantity, particularly, as I said earlier, in our educational process overall and in society. And I do know that each year, particularly in Dover or in the General Assembly, that education in targeted areas is an extreme factor. And I can suggest, as a matter of fact, it can be proven that the apprenticeship programs are one of the better ways for those to be trained and educated in their social skills and their mechanical skills, and I thank you.
Thank you. Next.
My name is Bob Field. I'm the co-owner of Eastern Highway Specialists. We're a Wilmington-based construction company. We have 45 employees. 35 of those employees are Newcastle County residents. We're based right here in the city. 8 of our employees are city residents. Our workforce is approximately 28% minority. I started this business 14 years ago, and we've now grown into a viable, respected business. We provide a livelihood for our 45 employees and their families. Over the last 14 years, we've worked for DLBAT, DRBA, Maryland Transportation Authority, Maryland State Highway Administration, PennDOT, PA Turnpike Commission. We've received the Governor's Safety Award. Our experience mod in Delaware is 0.84. We have won numerous construction awards for both safety and quality. We participate in the State of Delaware Apprenticeship Program. We also have an extensive training program for our employees in addition to that, including OSHA 10-hour courses and including OSHA 30-hour courses. So despite all that, at present we cannot bid in Newcastle County. We do not have a current equipment operator apprentice. We have 3 operators. 2 of them went through the apprenticeship program. They're journeymen, and the other was a 30-year previous experience operator. We do not have a laborer apprentice. At this time, we do have employees enrolled in the State of Delaware Carpenter and the Ironworker Apprenticeship Program. Still, by the letter of the law, right now, we cannot bid a Newcastle County project. We would be barred or disqualified. So, here's my question. Born and raised in Delaware, have an office here in the city, over here on the east side, have Delaware employees, and I can't bid in Newcastle County. So somebody needs to explain that to me, why that makes sense. So something needs to change in this law, one way or the other, because it's not working the way I think it should be intended. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. No clapping, please. Next.
Madam President, Council Members, thank you for giving me a chance to talk here. My name is Ralph Dougal Abizi. I'm from Ralph Dougal Abizi & Sons, a plumbing, heating, and air conditioning contractor. We've been in business since 1969. We've had a state-sponsored apprenticeship program since 1970. I, for one, went through the apprenticeship program, a certified 5-year plumbing pipe fitting apprenticeship, and I am a big supporter of apprenticeship programs. Apprenticeship program is part of the backbone of our company, and it means the world to us. We graduate about 3 to 5 apprentices a year, and the future of our company depends on our apprentices. Now, the problem I see with the original bill is there are some classifications that do not have state-sponsored apprenticeship programs. And that excludes tax-paying contractors from being able to bid Newcastle County projects. To fix this, someone needs to get with the State of Delaware, the Department of Labor, the Apprenticeship and Training Division, and get them to work with contractors and organizations to get apprenticeship programs for these classifications that don't. The problem is right now, the state will not sponsor when I start an apprenticeship program unless they have 12 enrollees. And that could be a big problem because there's not that many, for a tile setter, painter, there may not be 12 apprentices out there right now. So I would behoove the council to talk to the State of Delaware and try to get the state to maybe lessen the requirements so that they can put more apprentices into the program and get the state to sponsor these missing categories. And finally, this is the first time that I've seen the numbers on this, the previous bill and what it's cost the state. And I, as a taxpayer, am quite concerned with, number one, the previous administration, and quite frankly, some of the council members that have let this extra expense happen, and the taxpayers of Newcastle County are fronting the bill. So I am for this 17021, at least until they can get the rest of the apprentices, rest of the categories into an apprenticeship program. Thank you.
No clapping? Next.
Good evening, Madam President and Council Members. First, I want to thank all of you for your hard work. And I know it's a challenge to deal with the kind of issues that we're dealing with today. In December of 2014, while sitting in the county headquarters, we were informed of bids that had been awarded to contractors to build the library. At that time, we realized that there were no minority bidders selected. So we raised the issue, myself along with my wife. And the issues that we raised were documented, and I still have copies of the issues that we raised in terms of not having minority contractors. Because we knew that there were minority contractors in the state of Delaware that had worked on libraries before, and that were qualified to do the work. Subsequently, we met with the administration to address our concerns. Nothing really happened from the meeting that we had with them. And to my surprise, when we began to get data from the Route 9 Library Project, minorities were basically excluded from that project. I have lived on Route 9 for approximately close to 50 years, and I have worked hard, and I am the president of the Overbeaver Gulf Park Civic Association. I chair a meeting of the Route 9 Civic Presidents, which is a quarterly meeting. There's about 12 civic presidents who meet, and we discuss unemployment issues, which are critical and vital for the success of our children. And I have been baffled sitting here today in terms of the comments that I have heard. And I'm reminded of something that I read a long time ago, and it was written by W.E.B. Du Bois. And it was titled Economic Injustice. Economic injustice, placing those where they shouldn't be placed. That's what we have right now with this kind of legislation. Denying people the opportunity to compete. Pitting organized labor against unorganized labor. It is shameful and should not be tolerated. If we are in positions performing like this, we should think about leaving these positions. Thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Yeah, my name is Ed McTaggart, and I've lived in Newcastle County my whole life. I'm a union elevator constructor who is living proof, even though I'm at the end of my career, that the apprenticeship program works. It teaches you job skills, but like the young man said earlier, how to be safe so that you go home. But even more important, so that what we do out there is safe for the public. This sounds more like a cost thing where we're going to do away with the apprenticeship thing because of the unions versus the non-unions. And I think what you guys need to consider more than anything as a Newcastle County citizen, what you put out there is safe for the public. And it's a well-known fact that the apprenticeship programs teach the workers how to do things right and do things safe. And not only that, what they leave behind is safe, so that the people that use these buildings are safe for years. And then you don't have to deal with problems that they've left behind because we took the low bid and we used the unskilled labor. Okay? Not only that, the people who are going through this program, I've lived in this community for over 50 years. I make more money than the non-unions are to pay at $10, $15 an hour. Where do you think all that money goes? It goes right in back into this community. And I've never worked in Delaware. I drive a company van that has New Jersey tags. My union's in Philly. I went through my apprenticeship program in Philly, and most of my work was in Philly and Jersey. But I bring all that money back to Delaware, so I'm a little concerned about what I saw here because I think I'm left out. I'm taking money from other places and bringing it back in here. And that's not included in that. Thank you.
No clapping, please. Next.
My name's Joe Williams. I'm a resident in Newcastle County in Councilman Weiner's district. I'm also a business agent for the Elevator Constructors Local 5 and a member of the Delaware Building Trades. I sent all of you the email with the example, a very good example of what happens with the county not following the rule and enforcing the law, and the elevator contractor that got the contract for the county maintenance of the elevators. To answer your question, Councilman Kilpatrick, those two small companies, actually the three small companies, they don't bid on state work because of the bonding issue and other state requirements that they can't bid on. With Ordinance 17021, they'll be shut out of county work because it's not going to be a level playing field for the elevator guy, the person that thinks he can fix elevators, because last week he was fixing washing machines. Now he can bid without an apprenticeship on the county elevator contracts, whether he's installing them, maintaining them, or servicing them, okay? Last week, 2 weeks ago, to what you were talking about earlier, Madam President, I went to meet with County Executive Myers, with Mr. Marvellis, the President of the Building Trades, to talk about this. They showed us the PowerPoint. They said they were going to mail us the PowerPoint. They talked about transparency, new transparency in government, and he didn't give us, we said, can we have a copy of that? He didn't give it to us. We asked them, can you give us some time so that we can FOIA some of the numbers? It's been proven here tonight that a lot of the facts, so-called facts, in Mr. Lawson's PowerPoint are true. They simply are true. For my craft alone, there is no Votech school in the country that offers an elevator apprenticeship. It's a national apprenticeship. The union companies have one. The non-union companies have one. They're both accredited. The union wants better. It's not a correspondence course. It's a classroom, hands-on training, but I'm not going to get into that. And like my brother before me said, this is not about union or non-union. This is about the public safety. From my trade alone, you're asking for problems if you allow people to work on your elevators that aren't trained. It's just a mistake. The public safety is at risk here. We asked for time to FOIA the information in the PowerPoint. We were looked at with blank stares. All we asked for was a couple more weeks so that we could do a FOIA, and anybody that's done a FOIA knows how long it takes. We didn't get that opportunity. And I commend the Councilman Street and Hollins on their work and how much they fight for their constituents and for civil rights, but there's another group of people in this room that fight every day for equal pay and for rights for their workers and for the safety of their workers, and that's the business managers, business agents, and organizers in this room.
Thank you. No clapping, please. Next.
Hello, my name is Richard Byron, Local 5. I'm a 20-year resident here in Wilmington.
I think both sides here have very good points, but I think you're going about it the wrong way. I'm a certified welder. I went through a trade school in New Hampshire. I worked three jobs as a welder to try to provide for my family. 2 years ago, I got into this apprenticeship program. I waited 8 years on the list to get into this program. And if you pass this bill, it'll put me out of work. I can guarantee it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next. Please state your name.
Vincent Lashon, business representative for the Operating Engineers at the 542. Let you guys know.
Madam President, if I may please, we're repeating speakers who spoke earlier, and that's not what we designed the meeting for. When we came back, at this point, I think that anyone who's spoken earlier today had their 3 minutes. So we're not going to repeat this and have people, I think we still have other agenda items to do.
I'm a taxpayer of Newcastle County. I've been a resident of Newcastle County all my life.
We have rules here, and how much taxes you pay, but there are rules in this body that governs how we conduct our business.
Yes, Mr. Powers. Mr. Powers, how about we let him speak, and are you asking to
allow him to speak, but we're not going to continue to have people who've spoken early to speak.
I'm the last one.
You may be. I've been here long enough to know that people still get up to speak because a lot of people want to be last. I think that you're really tolerating too much comment from the audience here. Is that not the protocol of this office? And I think you need to be better job taking care of that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to let him finish speaking. His 3 minutes. It's not much time. That'll be the last speaker. And
okay. There are people here speaking that's not going to the podium. That's my point.
This will be the last speaker, Mr. Hollins. We'll let him finish.
Okay. Like I said, I'm with the Operating Engineers representative. We've been in business since 1896. We presently have about 350 members in the state of Delaware that I fight every head, every day to find jobs for. Minority participation in our local, to go back to what Councilman Sheldon said, in our local, about 42 years ago, there was a lawsuit by the members against our local to take their local back. Through the federal government, we were under federal monitor from a judge to make sure that we had a proper amount of minorities in our local. We're probably around 40-50% minorities now. The clarification I keep hearing is contractors, well, I'm talking about the workers, minority workers that we put to work. The DRBA, I helped organize the DRBA 4 years, the operating engineers over there. The biggest problem over there is diversity. So we do fight for minorities, for the workers. Contractors, I could go back and the day what Councilman Bell said, that all parties should be involved to work something out. You know, you got these contractors versus workers. What if, and I'll go back in time, which used to happen, a minority contractor would be grabbed by a big white contractor and be used and abused to obtain work on projects. We've gone back to that. When you stated earlier, those were excluded out of paragraph 8 and not in the ordinance. And they are excluded because they're not named in there, mine being on the class. If we go out and we establish an apprenticeship program in Newcastle County for all those crafts, they'll be accepted in this ordinance. That was your words, Councilman Collins. Now, what if also, which I just stated, that there's a lot of crafts with minority members, all of a sudden decide to become minority contractors? Are you going to accept them too, as a contractor versus a worker? I'm just saying, we don't need to lose the teeth in this. I appreciate your fight and Councilman Street. We fight every day. So, hopefully we can come together and work it out and continue fighting for what's right. But make it right for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Gonna read it in.
Okay, Mr. Hollins.
We can return to further discussion from members of council if there's any other comment from members of council.
Does anyone from council have any questions or comments?
Seeing no comments from other members of council, Councilman Powers, who is one of the co-sponsors of the legislation, has suggested that he also made public that he also would like to me to consider the tabling of the ordinance. In my discussion with Councilman Smiley, to consider the point that Councilman Smiley made, that if we're going to table this, we're not going to table this to allow for an ongoing debate around this issue. If there are any substantive issues that we need to talk about, then there will be some time to do that. There are certain parts of this legislation that I myself would not be willing to change. I'm not going to allow the legislation to be watered to a point where it doesn't make any sense or it's not going to do what we're trying to achieve here, and that is bringing about equity. But I will consider the council members who want to have a little bit more time, and especially a council member whose name is on this ordinance. So therefore, I'm going to move to table the ordinance for a date certain. That date certain, after consultation with Councilman Powers, saying that we could probably get it done in 6 weeks, I'm going to make the date certain for 2 months. So the first meeting 2 months from now would be June.
Keep going.
I would table the legislation for a date certain, which would be the first meeting of council, June 2017.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All against? No. Hearing none? Moving forward? Okay, anybody to make a motion to move forward?
Motion to return to regular order of business. Second.
Second. We shall resume. All in favor?
Aye.
All against? Hearing none? Presentations were on? Let's go back.
Let's pray there's no presentation.
Okay.
Right.
We didn't even do presentation.
Okay, we're going to move fairly quickly because the garage is only open till 10.
Nobody was waiting for a presentation.
Let's go. R-17-071, Councilman Smiley.
Presentations. Does any member of council wish to make a presentation?
I hope they will not.
Seeing none, at this point, let's see, we were going to call Marcus Henry, we're not going to, let's move forward with that. We could expand it out. Yeah, okay. Consideration of resolutions removed from the consent calendar and other resolutions. Seeing none. Okay. Oh, 17, Mr. Smiley.
Yes, I would request R-17-071 be read by title only and placed before council.
Second.
I make a motion R-17-071 be laid on the table.
Second.
All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? R-17-071 is tabled. R-17-072, Mr. Cartier?
Yes, I'd like resolution 17-072 read by title only and placed before council for its consideration.
Second.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes, thank you. This resolution is a purchase order. It describes the maintenance of computer software that will go to the county GIS system per title.
Does anyone from council have questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll open the floor to the public for comment. Seeing none, I'll close the floor to the public. Are there any final comments from council? Madam Clerk, please call the roll on R-17072.
Yes.
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 The bond one?
Hmm?
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
That's you.
Yes.
Okay.
R-17072
R-17-002 is passed. Next, R-17-073, Mr. Cartier.
Thank you. I'd like resolution number 17-073, read by title only and placed before council for its consideration.
Second.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes, I'm going to read from the synopsis. This resolution authorizes the issuance of up to $111 million of the county's general obligation bonds for certain capital projects and up to $6 million of the county's general obligation bonds for the refunding of a portion of the county's outstanding indebtedness. This resolution allows the bonds or a portion thereof to be sold to a competitive public and negotiated private sale at the discretion of the county executive, permits appointment of a financial advisor, prescribe certain details of the bonds, and authorize the county executive to determine the final terms of the bonds and in his judgment the most favorable for the county. In the fiscal note, this refunding of a portion of the county's outstanding general obligation bonds authorized by this resolution expect to result in a present value savings to the county of not less than 3% of the principal amount of such refunding of the bonds. The fiscal impact of this issuance of the bonds will depend on market conditions at date of sale.
Does anyone from council have questions or comments? Seeing none, we'll open the floor to the public for comment. Seeing none, I'll close the floor to the public. Madam Clerk, please call the roll on R-17-073.
Yes.
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 R-17-073 is passed. Next, R-17-074. I move that R-17-074 be read by title only and placed before council for its consideration and adoption.
Second.
Per title? Does anyone from council have questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll open the floor to the public for comment. Seeing none, I'll close the floor to the public. Madam Clerk, please call the roll on R-17-074.
Yes.
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 R-17-074 is passed. Moving on to ordinances, 17013, Mr. Powers.
Yes, thank you. I move that ordinance 17013 be read by title only and placed before council for consideration and adoption.
Second.
Mr. Powers?
Per title.
Does anyone from council have questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll open the floor to the public for comment. Seeing none, I'll close the floor to the public. Madam Clerk, please call the roll on 17013.
Yes.
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 17013 is passed. Next, 17014. Mr. Bell or Mr. Street?
Mr. Bell? Madam President, if it pleases my co-chair, I'll handle 14, the emergency management, and Councilman Street will be handling the mobile enforcement team funding for the City of Wilmington grant.
Thank you.
I move that Ordinance 17-014 be read by title only and placed before council for its consideration and adoption.
Second. No, I agree.
Mr. Bell?
As per title.
Does anyone from council have questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll open the floor to the public for comment. Seeing none, I'll close the floor to the public. Madam Clerk, please call the roll on 17014.
Yes.
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 17014 is passed. 17015, Mr. Smiley.
I request 17-015 be read by title only and placed before council for its consideration.
Mr. Smiley?
This is just the mandatory meeting dates for the Newcastle County Advisory Councils to allow them to have the most relevant financial information during county budget discussions.
Does anyone from council have questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll open the floor to the public for comment. Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please call the roll on 17015.
Yes.
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 I gotta go myself.
Yes.
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 17015 is passed. 17016, Mr. Smiley.
I request 17-016 be read by title only and placed before council for its consideration.
Second.
As per title.
Does anyone from council have questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll open the floor to the public for comment. Seeing none, I'll close the floor to the public. Madam Clerk, please call the roll on 17015.
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes.
Thank you. 17016, Mr. Smiling.
I request that 17-017 be read by title only and placed before council for its consideration.
Second.
7.
That's it.
Next one. Long night.
That's the first.
As per title.
Does anyone from council have questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll open the floor to the public for comment. Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please call the roll on 17017.
Yes.
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 17018, Mr. Bell. Mr. Street.
Yes, Madam President. I'd like to have ordinance number 17-018 read by title only, placed before council for its consideration and adopt.
Second.
Does anyone from council have questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll open the floor to the public for comments. Seeing none, I'll close the floor to the public. Madam Clerk, please call the roll on 17018.
Yes.
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 17018 is passed. 17019, Mr. Cartier.
Thank you, Madam President. Like ordinance number 17-019, read by title only and placed before council for its consideration.
Second.
Mr. Cartier?
Yes, this is the companion authorizing ordinance from the previous resolution 17-074. In here, this ordinance specifies that the funding is to amount to $50 million.
Does anyone from council have questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll open up the floor to the public for comment. Seeing none, I'll close the floor to the public. Madam Clerk, please call the roll on 17019.
Yes.
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 17019 is passed. 17020, Mr. Sheldon.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like ordinance 17-020 be read in by title only, placed before council for its consideration and adoption.
Mr. Sheldon?
Madam Chair, this has been going on for all my 13 years on council. It's the interest that's been in the Garson's Trust, and it goes towards the parks in Newcastle County. This year, the interest will be $280,000 from the Garson Trust portfolio.
Is there any other comments from council? Seeing none, I'll open the floor to the public for comment. Seeing none, I'll close the floor to the public. Madam Clerk, please call the roll on 17020.
Yes.
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 17020 is passed. We're going to skip 17022.
I move that ordinance 17022 be read by title only and placed before council for consideration and adoption.
Second.
I would say,
Mr. Powers.
I would say per title, but I'm really lighting up Southern Newcastle County, and I think it's kind of funny that people come out to the farm and say, "Wow, look at the stars!" And they don't have them at their house.
Does anyone per title? That's it. Per title. Okay. Does anyone from council have questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll open the floor to the public for comment. Seeing none, I'll close the floor to the public. Madam Clerk, please call the roll on 17022.
Yes.
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 Yes. 17022 is passed. 17023, Ms. Kilpatrick.
Thank you. I move that 017023 be read by title only and placed before council for its consideration and adoption.
Ms. Kilpatrick?
Thank you. We talked about this afternoon. This is an ordinance that was passed by the Human Resources Board and was approved by them. This would bring all of the general manager positions into compliance with the existing Newcastle County law for police chief, as well as with the state laws regarding return to merit. Any merit person who would be asked to take an appointed position would have the ability to go back into the merit system at the end of that appointment.
Does anyone from council have questions or comments? Mr. Street.
I'm not asleep.
Issue regarding acting.
It's just way of bypassing
what every other administration had to deal with in terms of selecting general managers.
Oh, right,
and
right.
To give
that clarifies that.
This county executive the authority to be able to take somebody out of the merit system and put them back as an extra layer of protection is fundamentally unfair, inappropriate, and it could cause, as I've said before, great deal of difficulty for the county exec coming after this one, because you're going to have a person in management, now you're going to send back into the department who's not going to be happy about not being in his or her position in management, and the great potential would purposely and intentionally undermine the county executive coming after this one. So, you know, everybody's jumping up and down now, ready about the change, but this will come back. Mm-hmm. To have an adverse effect, but in terms of what has been historically tradition and protocol, there's no excuse now all of a sudden to change that. Folks know when they're appointed that that's the risk they're taking, and either they're with the new exec or they're not. But to add this extra layer of protection because this county exec wants to do that, and I'm going to say again, politics has been real ugly tonight, and it sounds as though some things have been said on and off the record. It's getting ready to get uglier, and you know, this is not being transparent, okay? Because somebody knows full well who they want to snatch out of the merit system, place into a general manager position, and protect them to enable them to go back. I mean, I'm not saying you. Okay? But the administration knows full well.
How do you know?
They got their eye on somebody. The number one. They got the merit system. Make them a general manager. And you ain't got to worry about nothing, because if I don't get reelected, you go back. I got you. No, that's malarkey. This ain't worth the papers printed on this, and it's not fair.
Is anyone? Yes, Ms. Kilpatrick.
Thank you. We talked this afternoon about anybody that would be appointed to these positions and that they could be placed in acting, and we have looked that up since then, and there is an unlimited amount of acting time that they can be placed in, because they can continue to be reappointed to acting. When we have somebody in an acting position, their position does not get filled. So we have seen talent from the outside come into places like special services, and they have all quit on us. So if we are looking at bringing somebody into some of these departments that have a lot going on in them, we basically have to bring somebody in from the into that position from the inside. And when you do that, if they are not going to be ready for retirement, do we give them the option of going back into the merit system? So it's done on the state level. We do it for our police chief. Mm-hmm. And this would bring in, basically what they're doing is, if they say, yes, I will take that position, we get to confirm them. If they're acting, we never get to confirm them. So we are taken out of that process. If they're acting, we don't fill their position. As I talked this afternoon, if we want to look at special services, right now we know we have Tracy Searles acting in special services. We know that Wayne Merritt is probably going to retire in the near future. That means that we can't fill one of the senior manager positions in that department. And when Wayne retires, the senior manager position that would be filled would have no peer. So it would be a tremendous learning curve as they're coming up into this. We've had people from the departments that have said, I would love to go over into the administration and work with constituent services, but I can't do that because I can't just be there for 4 years. I have to know that I could go back into the job to finish out my career. So it's, you know, the will of council is the will of council. It's consistent with what they do in the state, and also consistent with a portion. We do it for one manager. We do not do it for the rest of them.
Mr. Bell.
Thank you, Madam President. I guess I feel this way many times. I don't normally say it, but not always what the state of Delaware does is the right thing to do. You know, they have a lot of rules and regulations and things that they do in Dover, and I'm not quite sure it's applicable sometimes to Newcastle County government. We've seen this when managers come from the state and do not understand county government or how hard folks have worked to get county government where it is today. So the thing on the state does it, I don't buy that. What I do buy is that this is, I totally agree with Councilman Street, this is kind of a flip of you're the county executive, you're getting ready to go out of office, and you want to put people in the merit system jobs. So what's the difference that when you take them out of a department, make them a general manager, and then they still have the right to go back after they've been appointed politically for 4 years or 8 years as a general manager? And when we talk about what's going on right now, it's like dominoes. You know, we got a special services manager that has vacated the premises. Okay, never expected that to happen. So what happens is the deputy CAO, now who was brought up to serve as the deputy CAO from special services, who was the manager of there before and then was an acting, okay, and now was the deputy CAO, who now is going back. Someone's coming up from Georgia, so now we have her going back, okay, to special services, and they want us to confirm her as the general manager. That's coming, okay? So I'm not sure that it's the best thing to do when you have political appointments in general manager jobs. If that's what you choose to do, you accept it. And that's exactly why some of the folks have taken an acting capacity just to help out in the interim. There's good reason why Wayne Merritt was left there so long, because Wayne Merritt did the job and did an excellent job. And I guess if we're contemplating him departing, I don't know that any of us know that yet. But like I say, I just don't agree with it. I think it's a wrong concept to put in place. And whether the state does it or not, I think it's wrong for Newcastle County.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Stroop.
Well, and I think I misspoke the first part of the argument, because I said that the two previous county executives asked the police chief to resign, and that's probably not true. But somehow or another, mysteriously, they didn't stay. Same church, different pew. So the analogy with the police chief is not applicable. And they talk about acting. Administration is acting like they're being transparent, and it's not. They know full well who they want to grab and protect. No, other people shouldn't be afforded a different level of protection than people who have served for previous county executives. And it's like big signs everywhere you go. You enter at your own risk. You don't want to take the risk and stay out of it.
Ms. Dillon?
Frankly, I think this is a really good idea that we should adopt from state practice. I have seen this work. I have seen a number of deputy and division directors who have come out of the merit system, have served their time, and then moved into a comparable position somewhere else. I mean, really, folks, I just think if people take this on, you ought to owe them the protection of the merit system if they've come out of it.
Call for question.
Ms. Kilpatrick?
Call the question.
Second.
Does anyone from council have questions or comments? No?
It's over.
Or no more?
Point of order.
Oh. Okay. Okay, that's it then.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
I'm going to abstain.
Yes.
Heck no.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
7-5.
17023 has passed. Next, there are no time-sensitive congratulatory honorary resolutions. We'll have one later in the back. There's no introduction consideration of emergency ordinances. Public comment.
Madam President. Yes.
Come on down.
And Madam President, I'd like to make a comment, too.
Yes. Please state your name.
James Parker.
Okay.
I just want to say hiring locally would be great. I was hired by the county to work at the farmer's market in our community, and also hired by the county to work on the history panels in the library. I was hired also to work on the tri-part area in our community, and it brought a sense of pride. It wasn't about the money. It was just pride. You know, walking through the changes happening in the community, and you as a part of it, you know, your children can look at it and say, that's what my dad did. That's what my mom done. And I think that brings up the community more than anything else. So when you do that local hiring, it's able to pass on to the next generation that we can build something special too. Because when they did the youth summer hiring, it was over 700 kids came out there, lined up around the corner to apply for a job. So our community, they want to work. And if they don't see the adults working in the community, how much hope will the kids have? So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you very much. Mr. Weiner and then Mr. Street.
Thank you, Madam President. Just want to remind this body of some Robert's Rules of Order. Motion to call for the vote is a non-debatable motion that requires a motion, a second, and then a vote by the body. The duty of the presiding officer is to maintain decorum, which requires a constant reminder of the audience not to clap nor to make comments. And it was very disconcerting for me after watching council presence since the 80s to sit tonight. It was painful because of the lack of respect for the decorum. The last thing I want to say is, and this is for any presiding officer at any committee meeting or at this meeting, and that is that, for the record, when a member of this body who wasn't here during the roll call enters, it is important for the presiding officer to note the person's presence so there'll be no question as to whether that person was present for deliberation and a vote. That's all I have to say.
Mr. Weiner, I will tell you, I said it 2 to 3 times every single time there was clapping.
Okay, Madam President.
Every single time, and with the number of people leaving and entering, council people, this chamber tonight, we would have been doing nothing but that.
Okay, Madam President. I hear what you have to say. I still have the floor. However, until council president Pro Tem came up, I don't care if you say I'm out of order, until President Pro Tem came up to speak to you, you never spoke to say, stop clapping. That was the first time that you did. And so I'm making it as a matter of order, and all of council observed, it wasn't until my fellow compatriot who's been here for over 2 decades like me said something until you started. It was very weak. It needs to be stronger.
Mr. Weiner,
you need to preside over this meeting. This meeting
Mr.
was a
Collins
sham
was
tonight, and I'm very disappointed with the way that this meeting was run. You need to get control of this meeting, not just to control council members, but to control the audience. Even people who may vote for you, you've got to stand up and run the meeting.
Mr.
And now you slug this. Why weren't you slugging this when the people were in here clapping and interrupting? Now I'm done talking.
Mr. Street.
Well, I guess now I'm not the only person that told Two of y'all got added on tonight. And my understanding of the rules is nobody is to be shouted or down. So now who's out of order?
Actually, that's not true. We have the rules here.
No, the rules
are supposed to. We will present. I will present them to you, Mr. Street.
Ma'am, the council rules specifically said that no member shall be shouted or gaveled down.
Unless they take their shoe off. If I may, motion to adjourn.
Second.
Before
meeting is adjourned. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? None. Meeting is adjourned.